Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
Yo.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Oh, what's Carnage doing down here?
I know. What is Carnage doing down here?
Not that Carnage.
No.
The Spider-Man villain. Like, oh. Apparently.
Different Carnage.
I didn't put him back on the Daily Bugle.
Like Maximum Carnage. Carnage.
That guy, yeah.
Hockey, you here?
Yep.
Cool. Purnell?
I just got an achievement a little while ago.
Purnell the super quiet.
I didn't even hear him.
Yeah, I heard him for like a moment. Sound like maybe he cut out. I don't know.
This isn't a good sign if he's using the new headset.
that's a bad sign.
Well, you know, maybe the headset's good, just the mic is shit. You never know.
Or might be the Bluetooth? I don't know.
Might be Skype.
I blame Skype. I
sound like
he
just said fucking.
So I'm guessing
probably did
or anything I'm saying, then shoot,
we can hear you now.
Good. Yeah,
how well can you hear me though?
Really good, but you're quiet.
Yeah, you sound a little distant.
I'm not sure how to fix that part, unfortunately, but
you sound a little distant, pensive, almost morose.
I shouldn't be distant, but
here's some beepity beeping.
Yeah, we can hear the video game.
The mic is picking up the Switch perfectly.
Well, that's good to hear. It's really
chirpy, like what all video games sound like in movies. Where it's just
Parnell was playing like the stereotypical video games.
Yes.
Well, let me know if I cut out when I'm saying this statement that's coming up. So I went to the restroom the other day to see what was going on.
Yeah, you cut out.
Oh, thank God you cut out. Because I did not want to know where that was going.
Did you flip the headset up? Put it back down.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to make sure that you're hearing me through the headset and not through the phone. That's why I wasn't where the sound was coming through. So I don't know. But you can hear me now then.
Yeah.
So
yes.
That's important. I mean, it's working like I thought it should. I just don't know how to change the name on it. So.
Well, figure that out. That's important.
I can't. That's the wonder and the magic. That I know how to adjust the sound coming in, not so much going out. So
I'm debating if I should keep all this and like have this be part of the review.
Yes. Yes.
May as well be. That's kind of part of the humor. Like, look how easy this learned. He's never used this shit in his life. And he's like, hey guys, can you hear me? Boost Mobile.
So yeah, this is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Hanging out with me today, we got Tim, we got Chris, we got Purnell, we got Aki. How is everyone doing?
Well, I could stand that, but that's to be expected in this day and age of trying to do everything at once.
I could be better. I could be significantly better.
Why is that?
Because the U.S. is fucking stupid right now.
Yeah, it is.
And the U.S.'s bizarre defense in this one odd case. I don't think there's ever been a time where it hasn't been stupid. It's just getting stupider.
Yeah.
Well, this is, that tracks, yeah. Can't argue with that. The U.S. has always been fucking stupid. You are correct. I can't argue that. You win.
The only thing that changes is the extent to which we should know better.
This is true. And at this point, we really, really, really should fucking know better.
Yeah.
Oh, my soul. It hurts my soul. I was up until 10 a.m. this morning. Just anxiety and anger and sadness. But I have a giant new plushie, so I'm fine.
Whatever. Yay, plushie. What kind of plushie?
I got the IKEA's Blahi, which is the gigantic blue shark one they have. It's almost 40 inches from tail to tip of the nose, and it is so soft and fluffy.
Jeez.
And Yeah, I got it because they I read somewhere that they were going to stop selling it in April. So I was like, you know, this is pretty big and I do need a new body pillow because mine has, I've had mine for like a decade or so. It's smushed. I need something new. So I was like, eh, it looks cute. It's a fluffy plushie. I'm buying girlier things finally for once in my life. So fuck it. I'm going to get it.
Fair
and
enough.
I got it. And it is so fucking soft and oh.
I have some plushies. I have an alien hominid plushie that was like limited to 50 handmade ones.
And as a we know, you're not snuggling with that thing because
no,
it's
hanging out on
what's
a shelf.
What's a hominid alien?
The game Alien Hominid.
I remember that one.
Look up the game. It's the little yellow alien from that game.
Oh, no, it's the imp looking thingy. Okay. I know.
Anybody check the
before Castle Crashers? I'm sounding like Jonah. It was there. It was the behemoth game before Castle Crashers.
Yeah, sure. And has anybody checked the prices on that thing since? Well, the GameCube version, anyway.
How many hundreds of dollars?
Oh, actually, I'm seeing it for like 80. But that's yeah, that's way better than the 300 I was seeing it for just a little while ago.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like 80 to 100, so that's all right. And the PlayStation 2 version's average price like $40. What never mind, false alarm. It went way up about a year ago though, I swear.
Which I didn't know about. E7 on the PSP.
Like, oh yeah.
E's really should port instead of porting E8 three freaking times. Like, port E7 to a console, so we don't have to play it on PSP anymore.
How did you jump to East, by the way?
I have no
about the value of old game skyrocket.
Oh, okay.
I learned about that value going up today, so it was current events.
I'm still stuck on the price of one game that I really want, but it's too expensive.
Which one?
MS Saga New Dawn. It's a PS2 Gundam game, the only one that I don't own that I really want, but it's like $180+. I'm just like, damn. I have a lot of trouble being like, yeah, let's go buy a PS2 game for like three times what it was originally worth, if it even cost that much originally.
I don't know the Gundam series of games very well. Are there a lot of RPGs in that series?
No. In the US, that is the only RPG. Okay. All the other ones.
I didn't
ones
even
are
know that was in
the
U.S. I thought it was an import you were talking about.
No, that's that came to the U.S.
Oh, wow.
It's the only one I don't fucking have, and that's the only one I really, really want because I like RPGs. I'm like, motherfucker. Like, that one and Journey to Jaburo, I think, would be like my go-to, too, because Journey to Jaburo was like the pinnacle of perfection for me.
What about really cool. You, Tim? You have a couple expensive games, don't you?
Yeah.
Oh, talking about ones we own?
I mean, Cubivore is still the tops, and that continues to just go up.
How much
lately.
Is that worth?
Let me pull up my thing. It was just like...
Please don't pull on your thing.
That game
no, that's for after the show. All right.
Oh, poop.
Are all y'all going to go do that together? Is it just going to be a big old circle jerk?
Cubivore is up to $650 right now.
Holy shit.
Oh, yeah. Holy fuck.
I hate that.
Followed next in value by Suikoden 2, Chrono Trigger, Paper Mario, which is complete in box, and Dragon Force for Saturn.
Nice.
I think the most expensive game I have is .hack GU, the very first one, the special edition. I still have all the pieces to it, including the box.
Pernell, what were you saying?
Are you talking about Paper Mario or Paper Mario Thousand Year Door?
No, this is for N64.
Yeah,
I also have Thousand Year Door.
Yeah, Thousand Year Door never got that expensive, right?
That was like $100.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, that's average for GameCube now.
Yeah, I know, right?
I mean, with Cubivore staring down the barrel of, you know, almost four figures.
Yeah, that's pretty nuts.
I got my complete inbox of that one still that I was mad about paying $40 for, but I've told that story on the podcast, I think, twice now, so...
I'm not sure what, like, expensive, just basic games I have anymore. Most of my expensive items are, like, collector editions, but just basic game. I think one of the more expensive ones I have might be 50 Cent Blood on the Sand.
Nice.
Yeah, that's gotten up there.
Which is, like, over $100, I think. Last I checked, it was.
I have, like, I have a lot of games that are over $100 now.
Mine. Yeah, it's like I think 40 my average
games.
I think anything before 2000 that I have on average is like $100 now. but besides Cubivore, I also have Godzilla on PS4, still sealed in plastic.
Oh shit!
Yeah, I think that one's. I think that one's close to 1,000 now.
Wow. For the PS4?
Yeah.
Yep. They lost the license, and so you cannot download it. The only way you can buy it is as a physical disc, and even though it got terrible ratings, people really want it.
Game is this?
Godzilla on PS4.
Fuck.
Oh, it's okay, let me see. It looks like
you could sell that, give me the money, and I could have money for my crippling addiction to Gunpla models. I might be able to buy like 4 of them.
Believe it or not, I've never even considered that.
You should really consider that. I need more money for my crippling addiction to Gunpla.
Let's see. It looks like there's a copy that's only $350 for PS4 that can be had.
Holy
so.
Shit.
Oh, that's cheap. Fuck it.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, that's a fuck it. Why not?
I could buy one Gunpla for that.
Yeah, my, okay, yeah, it's actually, it looks like it's coming down a little bit. That's actually kind of cool.
What is, while you're looking up prices, what is Spider-Man 2 for the Xbox One going for?
Spider-Man 2 Xbox. Welcome to Googling with the SML podcast. $12 used.
No, Xbox One.
Oh, Xbox One. Okay, I was looking up original Xbox. Sorry.
An Amazing Xbox Spider-Man 2 for the Xbox One.
Oh, you see, you didn't say amazing.
Yeah,
There's a complete inbox. Looks like $80 on eBay, but
for friggin' Spider-Man.
that's a bit now, and then they've got them up to $200 on some listings, but it looks like it's around $80 or $90 on average.
Yeah, the joys of being delisted.
Yeah.
I don't know if any of my games are particularly worth a lot of money besides that one. I've never bothered to look any of them up.
Go ahead, Pernell. Sorry.
That's okay. I just don't know how loud this thing is.
It's really quiet.
But on the next review, I'm going to freaking twist with this. But so I know that what I prefer to do is just not look. And then let somebody else go, by the way, man, this game is worth a lot of money. Or on a collector's group, somebody goes, I got this game for a steal at $400. I'm like, I got that game when it came out. It's worth $400 now? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. There was a chatter in a stream I watched that was talking about, oh, I finally got a copy of Chrono Trigger on the SNES. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. So, you know, that's great. I hear they're expensive. And I was like, yeah, I only paid $250 for it.
Yeah, only.
Like, oh.
Nice.
I only paid $60 for it.
Dude, the DS version's over like $100.
A friend of his is moving to like Canada, and he decided he wanted to just unload all of his games onto my friend, so he just like left a bunch of boxes at his house. Sweet. And quite a few, you know, rarities. Chrono Trigger was definitely in the box. Both Digital Devil Sagas were still shrink wrapped.
Damn.
He had quite a few. He's given me a Steel Battalion setup just because he doesn't want it. I was like, I'll take it.
Steel Battalion, holy shit.
Nice. You could retire off a copy of Steel Battalion if it's nice enough.
Yeah.
I'll dust it off if I have to. Shoot. I'll figure it out. But, yeah.
Should have brought it up. We could have played together.
Yeah, I've always just wanted to be the guy that actually finally managed to get one of these crazy game windfalls. The closest I've gotten was buying Mega Man X 1 through 3 for $25 apiece. And that
nice
was special, but I was happy to get it because I missed having the game.
Yeah, I missed out on X2 and X3, and I do regret that. But that's okay. Now I gotta like EverDrive, so I'm not buying any more SNES games ever.
Well, I guess how I feel too. Like with the world of emulation being a thing, I don't see the need to pay the collector's prices for games. Yet by that same token, though, I'm not comfortable selling my SNES games.
Oh no! Never gonna sell them. They're just going to live in boxes in various places where I hide them. if nothing else, if I don't need the money, I don't need to sell them because it's like they're just going to go up.
That is true. It's something about those games. Like, you would have thought they would have stopped by now with dead batteries or just like corrosion or anything. But like, nope, still worth tons of money. People still want.
there's a real healthy like community of people who are into restoring and like and preserving those kind of things. Like, you know, there's game repair services out there, and you know, I just had a Genesis Model 3 like RGB modded and recapped, so it should last another 30 years easily.
I'm just still worried about the day I walk into my damn game library and all my damn PS2 games and PS1 games is like some kind of weird disc rot or something.
Well, now they've got these things where you can now replace the entire drive with just a micro SD card.
That's true, which I'd be happy with, but it still would mean that the disc I have is no longer, like, it has no value anymore. But,
really? You know, but intrinsic, extrinsic, it's all up to you.
And it is true.
It was the disc that we had along the way.
Yeah. Oh, hey. Oh. Purnell.
Yes.
You have a copy of Persona Q for 3DS, don't you?
Yes, and Persona 2.
When was the last time you stuck it in a 3DS and saw if it worked?
Don't tell me that's got a glitch thing going on, does it?
It has a glitch thing going on.
Oh, no.
I actually, and I meant to bring this up when I discovered it, which was maybe like 2 years ago, but I forgot.
Good job.
But yeah, with the 3DS, you know, eShop going down, there's no better time to check your copy of Persona Q, as I did. It might have been last year. And yeah, the game would not load up on my 3DS. And I was like, what the heck is this about? And then I did some Googling, and sure enough, there was many other people who had the same problem I did with Persona Q, just like some kind of error on the game, and it just stops booting.
Wow.
What was actually incredible is that, like, I emailed Atlas to see if they had any kind of a fix for it. And they're like, no, we don't. Like, do you have a receipt of when you bought it? So I pulled up my Newegg receipt from like 2012, sent it to them, and they gave me they had me destroy the cartridge, and they sent me a digital code.
Wow.
Mind you, this was way after after the fact, like years after the fact. They did not have to do that, but they did. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Is Cornell fucked or not on the SML podcast? I'm about to check. Mm-hmm. I got to see where it is, though, first of all.
How did they make you destroy it? Were they like, put a gun to its head and take a picture and send it to us?
Well, yeah, they just said, send us a picture of the, you know, cartridge destroyed. So I just like took some heavy duty snippers to the pins. And yeah, that was that.
Dear, just take a gun to dear old Captain Noah.
Is your ship borked, Purnell?
We'll find out. I'm slowly turning the console on.
It felt bad, but I was not spending, you know, what it cost to replace a copy of Persona Q physically.
Imagine if you pay collector's prices for it.
Yeah, I'll keep the goodies that I have, but I will then play it digitally.
Goodies we have along the way.
Yeah, or more realistically, I will never play it again because my save that was halfway through the game is now gone forever.
Okay, because it did boot up.
Oh, good stuff, yeah. That song rips. Oh, my God.
It's a matter of that's what Persona Q2 has the same problem as just sitting up there in the box. Just wait.
That probably means that thing's worth a lot of money then if lots of them are breaking.
Yeah.
So that probably just upped its value significantly.
Yeah, no, those two are, yeah, Persona games in general.
Persona Q2 went up, because that was the last released 3DS game. Well, let me rephrase that, because I saw freaking Chris's Andros Dunos. at a certain point in time, it was considered to be the last release for the 3DS. So, and it didn't get a large print run either. And I got the collector's edition of it, so I believe it's worth a good bit of money, but I don't know how much that is.
Fucking yeah!
Yeah, there was an RPG that came out on 3DS as well right around that time, so I don't know if Androdunos 2 is even the last one.
Damn.
You want to know what the last subscriber to our channel is? It's Lloyd. Lloyd Berry just subscribed for the seventh month.
Hi, seventh month.
I am so sorry.
It was celebrated with a good old fucking yeah. But we're talking about expensive things. Purnell, you got something expensive to talk about. Should we get into reviews tonight?
Well, depends. I mean, can you hear me well enough for me to review it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're clear. It's just when. Oh, we got another one. Carnage subbing for his 21st month. Yay, everybody subbing tonight.
Yeah.
He fucking deserves that.
It's that time of the month, I guess. Everybody's got their free subs rolling up.
Subway subwich.
But yeah, Pernell, you got a fun fancy toy that you're talking on tonight. Should we get into reviews?
Yes, let's do that thing with the do.
All right, the first item to talk about tonight is the Turtle Beach Stealth 700 Gen 2 Max headset developed by Turtle Beach. It is available May 8th on the Turtle Beach website and at select retailers for $199.99. Pernell, tell us about this headset.
I want to preface this by flat out saying that you're like, hey, I got this headset, and do you want to review it? I was like, oh, what kind of headset? And he says, my Turtle Beach. I said, Turtle Beach? Oh, that's going to be garbage. Because
you did not tell me that, by the way.
I totally that is my favorite opening to a review ever on this podcast. Thank you.
Well, I want to say is because I've only ever owned one Turtle Beach headset in my life, and I got it on clearance at a Sears that was closing back in like 2008 for the Xbox 360, and I loathed the thing. It was like cables everywhere, new finagle ways of getting the damn thing to work. It just wasn't very uncomfortable.
New finagle technology. Oh, these kids and their wires.
The thing is, that was back when I was also kid-ish. I was able to roll with it. I still thought it was jank. But thankfully, this one is nothing like that. This thing is pretty freaking slick and elegant in a sense, too. Like, I was not expecting what came out of this box. When you take the headset
in a box, no.
When you take the headset out of the box, there are no cables running out of it, which is modern technology. I acknowledge that, but still, no cables running out, just a clear and present headset, no foam that's going to tear up over like a year or so. It's going to be strewn on your floor. There's no foam insert. It's just a pretty nice memory foam surrounding that goes, that just kind of covers the ear and keeps that tunnel sound going. As far as connecting it goes, what you do when you break it out of the box is you have to charge it up. It has it says 40 hours of time out of the box. I have not played this damn thing for 40 hours, so don't expect that. But I have been using it for a while, and it still claims it's near full power. So far, so good, like the classic cell phone battery life system. But after you do that, what you do next depends primarily on what console you're going to use it on or what you intend to do. If you're going to use this thing on an Xbox Series X, possibly also an Xbox One, well, they kind of designed this with the intent being to play it on an Xbox console because the thing also includes a USB dongle. And the intent is you take it out and there's a little switch on the side that's for selecting either Xbox or USB. You select Xbox, you plug it into one of the available USB slots on your Xbox console, and it pairs right up, and it runs. You don't have that. It's nothing to do with your controller. It's running right from the system to your ears. The only downside, though, this is probably something that most gamers don't give two hoots about, is the fact that once you do that, all the sound immediately pumps through the headset, game sound and chat sound. Now, I say this initially because I'm not used to that due to the aforementioned thing I said earlier in the review. But I'm adjusting to it. And it does help that there are volume settings on the headset itself where you can adjust for master volume.
Fucking yeah!
So you can balance it out to say, I want to be able to hear people better than the game or vice versa or a nice, healthy moraine mess. So I kind of like that a fair bit. I used it yesterday to play a good chunk of Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, and it made for quite an enjoyable experience there.
Good audio quality while you're playing.
Fantastic audio quality. And again, due to the ability to like kind of balance out as I needed to, it went from being like, oh my God, you guys are all way too loud to, oh, that's just right. We're talking Goldilocks sounds here. So it was a lot of fun doing that. However, if you decide you want to use this on, say, a PlayStation or so, or a Switch or PC, you take that same dongle, you slap it into one of those machines, and you switch it to USB mode. And then it connects through USB. And that, not USB, it connects to like a connection directly to the dongle in that regard. So obviously you're not connecting your headset by USB. You're connecting the USB dongle with this USB setting selected. And it pretty much runs the same way. I'm not 100% sure what makes it better for this compared to that. I'm guessing there's like maybe some like sound balance that it performs when it's on the Xbox as opposed to that. But at the end of the day, I'm not complaining because I bought it for the or correction. I took it on because I wanted a headset for my Xbox, and it's doing that extremely well.
But you in a sense bought it because you had to drive up here and pick it up so we could get this reviewed on time.
I did.
Get it?
I drove sticks. It wasn't all bad though. I like driving personally. It's just I don't like driving with wear and tear on my own car because I'm a cheap bitch who doesn't want to pay for repairs or whatever. And plus, we all know the gas prices, they suck nuts. But with those things aside, it was a great day for a drive. And it was nice hanging out with Joe and hanging out with his wife and hanging out with Jacob, despite everyone hating Jacob. But it's okay. It was okay hanging out with him too. So it was worth it. But it's this headset's been really nice. I haven't done much with this one feature that it mentions called superhuman hearing because it ain't going to do crap for me per se. And I don't play those kinds of games per se. But they claim that you can use it to pinpoint audio cues like enemy footsteps and weapon reloads. That, I don't even know where to go with that. Maybe I should try it with Type of Penis, but I guess it would just like fine tune itself to say, hey, that's the sound output for a footstep. I'm just blasting everybody though, so whatever.
I'm wondering if maybe they're referring more to like the microphone because of how sensitive it was. Like when you first connected to the call, we could hear you playing the Switch. Like all the sounds, everything you were playing, it was just coming over like crystal clear.
That's why I'm glad, because at first I was like, "Can you guys hear me? Can anyone hear?" Yeah, you're coming through great. We hear your game. Well, that's got to be good enough for me. But it's been really nice using this thing. Like I've been enjoying it. The only downside I've come across so far, and it's honestly a really small one, aside from the one I mentioned earlier, which was also a small one, is the fact that the one benefit that the other headset had due to being cabled or whatever is that the controls or any adjustments could be made on the control that was attached to the cable. So I want to turn the volume up or down. I'm looking at the cable, swoop, swoop, swoop. Or if I want to switch modes, I could do the same. But here, all those things are on the headset itself. So over time,
that sounds much better that you're just doing it on the headset instead of fumbling around on a cable. Where the fuck is the thing?
That's where it gets funny at, because on one hand, you're kind of right. It's nice to just be able to reach up and do it instead of having to reach down here and do it. But until you're used to where the button and dongle layout or the dial layouts are on this thing, you're just kind of fumbling in the dark because you can't look at it. You're wearing the headset and you're reaching over into the unknown to find a button or a dial to say, okay, here's the one I want. So at least for the earlier time being, you'll probably have like the piece of paper in front of you for the instructions to go, okay, here's the button layout I'm touching here. First dial is for the master volume, second dial is for chat. Boom, here's the mode button. Got it. And then the power button, then the Bluetooth button, and the LED, which you don't really need to look at anyway, because that's more so for determining if it's charging or if it's pairing up with Bluetooth or what have you. So you get used to it, but at first, like recently I've had to like pull the thing off to make sure I was pressing the Bluetooth button to connect to the phone. Because I didn't know where the button was. But it's a good headset. Like, I mean, like, I'm walking around the house right now talking to you guys, and it's been nice having this feature. It's probably clear hearing me right now, and you've probably heard me on the show the whole time I've been doing it.
Yeah, it's really clear. I can't tell that you're walking around, except for the fact that you just told us. Normally, when you're on speakerphone, we could tell, and you cut in and out, but when no one else is talking and there's no other audio coming through that I think the headset's trying to filter out, you're really clear, and it sounds good to me. My question is, it sounds good, it's comfortable, it performs well, but is it worth $200?
I'm going to be honest, this is one of those that comes down to the individual bits, because I think you've known me for years, so you know flat out I would probably never pay $200 for a headset unless it's giving me a freaking blowjob.
But that's a good headset, by the way. The one that blows you.
I'll buy it.
I had those.
But with that all said, though,
the fans and the handle would
drop good coin on a fantastic headset. I feel like this one belongs in the running for headsets you would pay money for. Because I can't speak for myself because I'm cheap. But if money weren't the issue for me and it was just, do I want to pay for a really good headset? I do believe this falls in line for it to say, yeah, I got $200. I'll get the headset. Just give me. I mean, mean, we just had the chat about the freaking like memory expansion. Like, it's worth it, but it's not worth X amount of dollars to me. But I would love it. Same with this. When the price is right, yeah, I'm jumping on it. So if the price is right to you, the listener, and your question is this a good headset? This is a fantastic headset. So your money will be well spent if you're okay with forking over the cash to get it.
Cool. All right, you guys are ready to get to the games?
First
yes.
game.
Yes.
Yay.
I'm the one that has to be ready.
All right, first game to talk about tonight is Rogue Legacy 2, developed and published by Cellar Door Games, released April 28th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and PC for $24.99. Rogue Legacy is back, but now it's got a 2 at the end of it. Tim, tell us about it.
Was that the copy
yes.
they gave you?
Yes.
Nice. Very good. Fantastic. Yes. My gosh, it's been almost 10 years since Rogue Legacy. Holy shit. The yeah. one without a 2 in front of it. And that's wild. Yeah. And the original was a pretty kind of a big deal. And that it felt like it was kind of at the forefront of rogue features being dropped into pretty much every game on the planet. But also it was kind of the first one that was like, oh, hey, this is like really fun. This all works like in a really super fun and clever and addicting way. And they applied it to the, you know, the other genre that everything turns into, which is Metroidvania, where, you know, they have a procedurally generated castle, where they have kind of different like room pieces and enemies that they put together. And your job was to get in there and defeat four bosses, and then you won the game. Great. But kind of the big twist is that whenever your character would die, you would then carry on as that character's descendant. And it would just keep, hence the legacy, like it would just keep kind of get passed down through the family line. But you would take the gold that you recovered from exploring the castle and spend it on upgrades and equipment back at your camp. So each successive generation was getting like a little bit stronger and a little bit stronger and a little bit stronger.
Speaking of spending money on things, ouch. Carnage dropped another sub for Thimber. So thank you.
Oh, nice.
Yay.
Yeah. And Rogue Legacy now featuring a 2 at the end of it, is that, again, in basic premise.
And it's fucking awesome.
Except that they just added a bunch of shit and polished it up. And
I want to ask a question real quick, since you were laying out the description of the first game.
Drop it! And this is,
when you die and the new generation is born and comes into play, do they actually look distinct? Because I remember one issue I had was, it was just like, hey, they all look the same, except sometimes one might have like, you know, like curly hair or something.
I think there's more distinguishing factors between them, but I don't know.
They still kind of look the same. You're supposed to be family.
Yeah, they still kind of look the same. But you do see more slight variance between them, but it's not like wildly different characters. And that's probably just to you know, assist you with reading the screen and your character and their actions and all that. But yeah, let's take that first game and let's add way more stuff. Let's add more areas. You now have to defeat 6 bosses. Well, presumably 7 once you get through the big door at the beginning of the game that has 6 portraits around it. I don't remember how many classes were in the first game. This one has like at least a dozen somewhere in that neighborhood. I haven't unlocked them all yet.
Oh my God, there are so many classes to unlock in this game.
Yeah, I still have one that I have not happened upon on the massive, absolutely fucking massive skill tree yet. The skill tree in this game that you're spending your gold on takes the form of you like building up your family's castle. So each time you unlock like a new node on it, Purnell, you love those things, it will build up another piece of the castle. Though then you can reinvest on that same square up until a certain, so if like it's like, oh, this square upgrades your physical damage, you can then pay again to upgrade that damage square like another, you know, usually up to 5 times. Some of them are 10. It varies from square to square. And so, yeah, There's just so much stuff. It's like you're upgrading your strength, you're upgrading like every statistic you could have. They layered on more systems, so other you know, along with just having, you know, your strength and your armor and your health and your intelligence, there's like a whole weight capacity system, you know, an equip load. There's this stat called resolve, which your equip load can offset, and it's interesting. So it's like you use the equip load if you want to like load your character up with, you know, armor and equipment as you go into the castle, but it gives you less currency to pick up artifacts in the castle. So like your resolve will be a percent. Usually, I think for most characters, it starts somewhere in the neighborhood of 200. As you pick up artifacts, it goes down and it will tell you how much an artifact costs to pick it up. And once you start going over under 100, it starts to lower your health. So there's a give and take thing going on there. There are more people in town to help you out. There is the blacksmith is there, of course. There is a mechanism for holding over a little bit of your gold from run to run. There is a magician who will empower runes for you that you can equip on your character. There's other weird shit. There's a practice dummy. There's the guy who will lock the castle in place, like the entire layout in place for a, you know, a percentage of your gold. That stuff's all still there. It tells you. So one of the weird, if I recall this correctly about the first game, it's like you'd pick your character, your next character, it would drop you on the kind of skill tree and you could spend your gold, but you wouldn't know if there was something in town that you could afford. Cause once you go into town, you can't go back. And this game has a big button that says like, hey, there's things you could afford in town.
And you could go back. You
know. No. Oh, can you go back? I didn't even know. Yeah. So you can, it's easier to figure out like what you want to spend your money on. And then like, you know, once you actually get into the playing of the game, these are all the systems they've added. You know, there's just everything looks really nice. It is a really nice graphical upgrade. The first game was pretty simplistic, I feel like, in just how the environments look and the characters, but everything here just looks really real nice, just really well animated, really well drawn. Like the environments look better and more dense, you know, not as empty as they did in the first game. There is more of them. There is way more abilities for you to find for your character, double jumps and dashes. And there's this spin jump mechanic where you can bounce on lamps and on enemies' heads that plays into platforming challenges. There's like in the castle, there's tons of like secret passageways. There's treasure hidden everywhere. They brought back the fairy chest thing, which you'll go into a room. There will be like certain parameters you have to meet in order to get to this chest and open it. Or otherwise, it just kind of melts into a pile of useless goo. Like I said, there's more areas. There are more classes. The classes are more, there's more variety between them, and there's you know, you have your like basic warrior, you have like your, you know, a heavier armor guy, you have your mage, and then it's like you have a chef, you have a bard, you have different kinds of magic users. There's an astrologer. I'm not gonna be able to remember all of them. There is the Ronin, which is a samurai class who has a really long reach with his sword.
Ronin the samurai.
They all have like a specific ability to that class, and they all start with a magic spell. Even if they're not a magic user, they just have a lower mana pool. And as you're exploring, you can find different spells if you want to swap out on your character, or different abilities sometimes, or different weapons. Each, you know, class has its own weapons. And yeah, when you die, it offers you three new characters and you pick one, and you go. Oh, and also, of course, it carries over from the first game, like the fact that there can be like all kinds of interesting bonuses or problems with your children. like, you know,
traits.
Traits, yeah, interesting traits. Like, of course, the ever popular irritable bowel syndrome returns, so you get a fart jump ability. There's so much, and it's fun to discover what they do. But you know, some of them are debilitating enough that they give you a gold bonus, like colorblind. If you're colorblind, the entire game's in black and white, and you get a 25% bonus to your gold.
I saw one that was like all film grain. I saw one where the enemies were all pixelated. They were censored.
Yes, they were sent because they were all lewd. Yes. There's one where your character is a diva, so there's just a spotlight on them and the rest of the room is dark. My favorite part of that one, and it does spotlight the enemies, so you're not completely hosed, but like when you clear all the enemies in a room, like there's cheering and they throw roses at you.
I have not run into that one yet.
There is a pacifist one, which means you cannot damage enemies. And you'd be like, well, what am I going to do with that? And what you're going to do is get plus 200% gold. So you just end up running through the castle, you know, not fighting anything and just looking for treasure chests and trying to get as much money as you can out of the run. And breaking, you know, barrels and boxes and stuff. Just look, I just did one earlier and just like zipped through, you know, fast as I could right before the show and got like, you know, 3,500 gold out of a quick pacifist run.
Nice.
Before I just tossed myself into spikes because I had to come in here and record. And there's just tons of different stuff and it rolls it all up randomly. And there's, you know, I don't know how many hours into the game, how many hours I've put in, how many generations I have played at this point. I've only beat two of the main bosses. I have found a third one.
I've beaten five. I'm 5 hours into it. I've kind of hosed cheated a little bit because they have house rules in the game.
Yes.
Which yes, I am a fan of. They let you change how much damage the enemies do, how much you do to the enemies. They let you fly if you want. You could just hit the button and float. And if you're barbarian, you do a floating spin attack and you just hit the attack button and you're a floating wheel of death. Beautiful.
Down here.
Well, I am not playing with any house rules, so I am still just, I'm doing a lot of just like trying to get a bunch of gold and then unlocking as much shit as I possibly can. Just, I wanted to see what was on the castle.
And the beauty is you could play it both ways.
Yeah. But also, yeah, I was going to say,
seems interesting.
It has house rules, so you can do whatever you need to do to make the game as easy or weird or accessible as you want and whatever. I mean, they tell you it's like, yeah, you know, we think you'll be able to get through the game with just kind of the RPG elements, but if not, go nuts. And the game has good music, so.
Yeah, well, the game is sitting at $24.99. What are your thoughts on this one?
I mean, this is like probably one of the easiest buy it recommendations in the history of the show. Like, it's an awesome game, and I just about anybody would enjoy it, and it has that house rules menu so that, you know, even if if you're not great at action platformers, you'll still be able to sit down and play it. And if you love the first Rogue Legacy, you will love this game. And if you didn't play the first Rogue Legacy, you'll still probably love this game. If you love Metroidvanias, roguelikes, any kind of side-scrolling action game, like, there is no like caveats like, oh well, you know, if you like this, or it's like if you don't like that, it's like, no, this is just like a very broadly appealing video game that is very well made and is a ton of fun. So,
yeah, I can agree with that. Game is absolutely stellar. All the improvements and upgrades that they've made to it are absolutely worth the price of admission. So if you have an Xbox, pick this one up. Or if you have PC, just grab it and play it. And hopefully it shows up on other platforms soon.
Would love to have it on Switch. My God.
Anyway, next game to talk about is Loot River, developed and published by Straka Studio, released May 3rd on Xbox One, Series X and S, and PC for $24.99. Set in a series of procedurally generated labyrinths, Loot River is a dungeon-crawling action roguelike that combines tense real-time combat and dark fantasy settings with spatial block shifting. Tim, tell us about Loot River.
Well, you know, let's be realistic. This game kind of suffers from coming out the same time as another roguelike that is also $24.99 that we just talked about that is really, really good. But there is also some really cool stuff going on in Loot River, but it definitely did not capture my imagination or attention as strongly as Rogue Legacy 2. So the hook of this game, it is a roguelike. You die and are going to keep going through randomly generated dungeons to try to proceed forward. The hook is that it is the perspective is overhead. And there is, along with your combat, you know, trying to find loot and progress forward, is there is a slide puzzle game element to it. And the, all the levels take place on water. And you will step out onto a platform, and then the right stick will move that platform. And they are in, you know, different. They're not like Tetris pieces. Like, they come in all different, you know, shapes. They're all rectangular, so they all kind of fit and squeeze together. So you are riding these around. You will riding from one platform to the next, and some platforms will have enemies on them for you to duel or maybe run past to the next platform and then zip away down the river and not fight them.
Or do what Purnell did and stab one in the back way and stab one in the back way.
Yes.
And stab
yes.
one in the back way.
Yes. And that is one of the cool, that is one of the ways in which, you know, it blends this puzzle element and the action of the game together, and that you can use and strategize floating around on these platforms into your combat as you kind of like hit and run, like swoop in on a platform, hit an enemy and swoop back away. And there are enemies that they introduce fairly early on that as soon as you bring your block up to another block that thing is standing on, it will lock them together, so you can't do that shit. But there will be kind of puzzly elements built into the level with how they configure the blocks, where it's kind of like, oh, okay, I need to be on a block of this size to fit through this space, so I need to figure out how to jimmy these things around and fight some enemies to get what I need to do and slip through this passageway. They're also different heights, like which are indicated by the color of the actual piece. But you'll need to like go upstairs. You'll need to find blocks with stairs on them to go to higher elevations sometimes, which is interesting. They do a lot of cool stuff with the gimmick, basically, of riding on these blocks and having this kind of puzzle aspect mixed in with the actual game. That I think makes the game really cool and worth checking out. Where I feel like it falls like a little short is in kind of the systems and mechanics that pair with that. The combat has you get two weapons kind of right off the rip, which you can switch between. Your attacks are up on the shoulder buttons, and there is a dodge. So immediately I'm like, oh, it's like overhead Dark Souls. I've seen this before. When your L1 or your R1 is your light attack and your R2 is your heavier attack, and there's dodging and there is parrying, which is tricky to get used to just from kind of the perspective that you're looking at the characters from, and that it is overhead and it's not zoomed in super tight to be able to kind of see when swings are coming. I did realize that there is a indicator when they're getting ready to have a hack at you, but when there's a lot of enemies around you, that is hard to keep track of. And like, as you progress, like it'll put a lot of enemies coming at you at one time. But the combat is decent when you're in smaller groups. It's tougher when they're larger ones. But yeah, as you go around and you'll defeat enemies, they will drop equipment. They will drop like these, I don't know, souls. Fuck it, why not? These big blue things that you'll collect. They'll drop money that you can use on merchants that you find around. I don't remember. I think the spells are attached to weapons. The spells might be separate from weapons. I might be mixing that up. And you'll find upgraded versions of the weapons, to make your character stronger. You will gain experience to level up on a run. So the only thing I found, you'll also find these modifiers. I don't remember what they call them in the game, but they will do things like, enemies drop higher level weapons, but the enemies are also do more damage. So you can activate that for a run. But there is a risk and a reward to it. And they'll have stuff like that. There's one that I thought was funny because there's some enemies that have this like really long range, like sword spear attack that will like stab at you from like quite a range away. And one of them is just like, the sword spears weren't invented, but enemies have more health. And I was just like, okay, that's an interesting trade-off that I might be able to get down with. Because, man, those sword spears, they hit you so far away. They just stretch out and stab you. So anyway, you collect – your gold doesn't carry over, though it can be used to buy stuff. You use these soul things to unlock more weapons on a weapon tree. My beef is that, like, you have to have enough souls to, like, unlock. Well, they don't carry over. So if you die, they're gone. So you have to get back to the sanctuary, which is kind of you go back to after every level. And then you have to have enough to unlock the weapon. So you can't, like, invest them and then be like, okay,
I'm all or nothing.
It's all or nothing. And that sucks. That sucks, and it sucks because that's the only that's really the only way that you're adding variety and possibly, you know, it doesn't even really make the game easier. It just makes the game more interesting. And I was able to unlock one weapon, but I was just like never able to to get enough currency to unlock another one. I went back to see like, OK, can I just like slip a few, because that's what they do in Dead Cells. It's like when you get to a resting point, it's like, okay, I can invest these to unlock more stuff. I might not unlock it all the way this time through, but then at least, you know, I've put 20 cells into unlocking this item and I can get the rest of it next time. Here, it's just
still
like
making progress,
all or nothing. And even then, like, you know, I like enemies weren't dropping that much stuff. I was not like, you know, some run, like my first couple runs, I was getting better weapons, like right off the bat. And then like later runs, I was just not getting, I was getting rings. So I was getting stuff. But it wasn't helping me kill enemies that much. And then it's like, okay, well, it sets you back. And well, it's just
Purnell,
like, you know,
I know, Purnell, you put a few minutes into this while hanging out at my place. I know one of your big gripes was lack of loot variety.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, it drove me freaking bonkers. Like, I remember like getting like a good like two sections into the game, and I came across an NPC. He was like talking to me in games, like, there's a lot of danger up ahead. Make sure you're well prepared. I got the stuff you need. And he goes to his inventory. He's got the same name sword, two versions down from what I'm already carrying. Mm-hmm. And it was just the same, like, across the entirety of the game I played, I saw one, like, two types of armor, being like a shawl and a hat, a hunter's hat, and the same sort of the guilty in like spear or whatever the hell it was called.
Yep.
But mm-hmm. Same stuff. And I was like, this is ridiculous. There's no joy in finding loot.
Yeah. And they didn't really, yeah, there isn't like modifiers on them to make them distinct from one another. It is just like such a bummer where it's like, oh, okay. Oh, we dropped a weapon. Oh, it's worse than the one I have, or it's the exact same as the one I have,
no.
You know, like have some generosity here. We want to have fun with the game, friends. One other thing I do want to mention that was cool. I think their potion economy is really neat, and that you start off with four potions, but you talk to there's a guy right before you head out who is like, hey, you can basically invest potions with him. So if you hand him one and then you make it through the level, you get back to him, he gives you two. Or if you give him two and you make it through around the level, he gives you four. So ooh, you can give him potion. It's a risk reward thing where you're like, okay, if I only need like, you know, one potion, let's say I need one fucking potion to get through this first area, you give him all the rest and you'll have a ton for the later areas, you know? Or if you're like, well, this one I'm struggling with, I'm going to maybe not invest any, or maybe I'll hedge my bets and I'll invest a couple, you know? I think that's a really cool risk reward thing, in this game. It's just cool. I like it. It's a cool idea. But and I think the look of it, I didn't mention the look. I think the look of it's really nice. It has, you know, the pixel art. I like the way that the water ripples as you move the pieces around. it just looks kind of nice and foreboding. All the characters are kind of like a little bit rough around the edges. And that's cool stuff. It has a good mood to it, but, how in the world could I feel good recommending you spend your $24.99 on this game when Rogue Legacy 2 just came out? But fortunately, this one's on Game Pass.
Yeah.
So you can just try it out on Game Pass, and that's what I would recommend. Hopefully they will, you know, use the magic of games never being finished in this day and age and just kind of like be a little more generous with giving out stuff and spicing up the runs, because I do think there is something there. I think the mechanics are super cool and very quite literally worth trying out. It's just kind of like over the long haul, I was kind of like, I finished a run. I don't want to do another one. I'm going to play more Rogue Legacy 2. Whereas when I finished a run in Rogue Legacy 2, I was already starting the next one. You know, yeah. Like there was not even a thought. It's just like, nope, here I go.
Yeah, it's tough that they came out right at the same time. I think if Loot River released any other time of the year, it would stand out a lot more. But with Rogue Legacy breathing over on its neck, you know, yeah. $24.99 official verdict.
It's a try it, but try it it's on Game Pass, so you can. Yep. Yeah.
Pernell, any thoughts?
I'm kind of in the same boat of like just stick with Rogue Legacy because. That loot was driving me crazy. The point was like, I was having fun until I realized I'd never think I was getting anything. Maybe that's remedied by buying the stuff on that table, and then maybe it shows up in the loot drops. But if that's not the case,
it does. I got an axe that shows up every now and then, but then now I'm up to 3 weapons from 2. So it's not that big of a difference.
They should have started you with a better economy to lead into the game and then have the other stuff show.
Just let you invest the stuff. Let you make the investment and then have it carry over. So if you will eventually keep unlocking stuff, no matter how crappy you're doing, you know,
Hopefully Straka hears the feedback and implements it. And if there's any updates, we'll be sure to let people know.
Mm-hmm.
But Tim, that's it for you.
Yeah.
I guess I'll talk to you tomorrow for wrestling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Since it'll just be us.
Yeah. Everybody else is going to be in the stadium.
Going to be a good show though.
Go on to like the event like firsthand.
Yes. Yeah, we have a little wrestling group that we watch together on Wednesdays, and they're all in Baltimore going to the show.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
All right, Tim, any final words?
I do actually. We were talking earlier about fucked up things in this country. And things that we learned today. And something I learned today is that founding father, Governor Morris, died from a self-inflicted penis injury. these are the kind of people that wrote the Constitution that some people want to adhere to so closely. Because apparently he had a urinary tract infection so bad, or some kind of a blockage, that he attempted to take care of it himself by sticking a whalebone up his penis hole.
Nice.
What?
And it got infected and he died. And
literally.
Yeah. That's what I learned about our founding fathers.
He was just really into sounding. Don't let historians bullshit you.
Yeah. And that's unfortunately the type of thing that might happen to maybe certain people in this country trying to do at home healthcare. Because it's illegal in their state.
So vote, kids. Vote.
Well, yeah.
It's like all the songs I've listened to like back in the 90s and early 2000s that was like, yep, these were things people used to do. Don't forget that they did that. Don't make them again. And people were like, we forgot they used to do that shit.
Really dumb shit. Yep. Whalebone in the urethra. Bye, Governor Morris. Thanks for writing the Constitution. All right. Good night.
Good night.
Next game to talk about is MotoGP 22, developed and published by Milestone, released April 21st on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $49.99. The full 2022 season, 120 official riders, 20 plus official circuits, 70 plus historic riders, and the most beloved features are back, now improved for the best racing experience, but there's so much more. Chris, how much more is there?
Oh, Lord. I Yeah, that's probably the hardest question that anybody's ever asked me in a podcast. So yeah, Moto GP 22. Well, I'm going to put it this way. This is a time travel game that features some motorcycle racing.
So... Why?
Please tell me you're joking.
No. I mean,
no, I get what you mean. I get what you mean.
Yeah, Joe gets what I mean. Okay,
you're rewinding so fucking much in the game.
Oh, but there's more. Oh,
that I remember freaking mistake after mistake after goddamn mistake.
Yes. So, so I reviewed the preview of this back in the day, and then, you know, I got the full version and spent an extra week with that, and that was really nice. So yeah, this is a game that has a ton of modes. You got a career mode. You got Moto GP 1, 2, and 3. I don't even know what that means. Is it like harkening back?
Different classes, I believe, of of bike.
Yes. And so let's take career mode, for instance. You start a career mode. You pick your Moto GP 1, 2, or 3. I picked the first one, even though it was unclear as to what... I just, based on numerical logic, I was like, well, okay, first one must be the best. And then you go about creating your racer. Okay, so far so good. Then you go about hiring a manager. Okay. And then you go about hiring your crew. All right. And then you go to race your first race in your career, and you're like, cool, cool. And they're like, wait a minute. You need to go, like, test out these different, these different flux capacitors in your bike so that you can have, like, the best racing, the best chance of winning the race. And I'm like, okay. So they put you on a track with, like, different configurations, and then you basically race around on them and decide which one you like. All right, cool. And then you go to the race pre-qualifications, and if you place first or second, then okay, great, now you get to race. It's been 3 hours. your cat has run away. Well, in Joe's case, it's like five or six cats.
Yeah. I'm just all by myself.
Yeah, just all by yourself with your seven or eight remaining cats.
All by myself.
Yeah. So, it takes a while. I mean, of course, there's quick modes. There's plenty of stuff. But I'm just saying, as somebody who tried to get into career mode, I spent half my time preparing for career mode just to get into the actual racing, which is
very
realistic, except for one thing, and that is that it's a time-traveling game. So you start racing, and basically you have to look into the future at some unspecified point to know when you're going to start braking. It's way before you see a turn, for sure. You got to hit those brakes. And then you slow down, you go and turn and turn and turn and turn. Oh, and by the way, you get to, like, while you're creating your racer, you get to pick everything about this racer, including what style of turning they do, where they, if do they stick out one knee, do they stick out a knee and a shoulder, do they trim their sideburns with the asphalt, you know, it's like, or the road. You get to choose all these things. You get to choose the amount of fingers that your racer uses to touch the brakes. I kid you not, between 1 and 4, you choose the amount of fingers. Yes. So, I'm telling you,
I can't win a goddamn race to save my life.
Exactly. So here's the thing. You know, you go into the future and you see the mistakes that you have made, and so you then anticipate the turn by starting to brake, and then you just lean all the way over where you're just basically, like, you know, listening to the gravel hit your helmet. And and then, like, if you don't fall off your bike, then you get to speed back up and try and catch up to everybody who's just
trying to win
you
against another curve.
Yeah, exactly. You're winning against the curves. But if you fall off, good news. It's a time travel game, so then you travel back in time. You can just sit there, and, you know, you push to the right button, and then you hold down the left trigger until you get to a spot where you're like, okay, I kind of remember. I think I can work with this. And then, you know, you just try it again until you get it. The game doesn't penalize you for any reason. It's literally just a pride thing. It's, you know, as you get better, you can rewind less. And, you know, if you wait too long, then you have to rewind back so far that, you know, you'll start to see a Polaroid of your brother and sister disappear before your eyes. but provided that that you got your time traveling down and you get to, like, you know, race around and everything, and, you know, you do pretty well, actually. Yeah, Back to the Future is what I'm referring to. Thank you. yeah, that is what you do, and basically you can choose like a small career, you can do an entire career, and I think it just plays out in real time. I think you're actually going to get paid by MotoGP 2222 a salary for racing these races.
Might be. Can't guarantee that. Might be wrong on that info.
And, you know, of course, this is a game of skill. Again, it's realistic. Everything down to, like, the you know, replacing every kind of thing on the bike, like the brakes and also the brakes. You'll have things like the tires degrading, and you'll have to, like, pay attention to that. You know, when you're choosing your flex capacitor, you might choose one that has a little bit better control, but a little bit more, it eats up the tires a little bit more. So, you know, you kind of have to watch out for that, and, you know, do watch out because these races can get pretty long. I'd say, like, you know, the first one by itself, let's see, it's like 6 laps and it's like 2 to 3 minutes a lap. So, you know, 12 to 20 minutes.
Yeah, they add up.
Yeah, they do add up. And
for how tough they are, this is an issue we've had with games from Milestone in the past, where you need to be perfect with your race no matter what difficulty you're on. It's now, just they expect too much of you.
Yeah, true. But, I mean, they do give you, in this game, the opportunity, because they do have a massive tutorial, which I talked about in the preview, because that's mostly what I did. So, yeah, you can practice everything like in that the game will throw at you. You can practice you know, how to keep both tires on the ground at all times, you know, like different things like that, like preventing wheelies or whatever. So that's pretty cool. And but yeah, so that's like career mode. That's basically, you know, you choose your career, you do your best, you can hire and fire like people from your team that you don't care about. Like Johnny Thunder, that was one of the managers that came up. And but anyways, and then you have, of course, like I said, the quick modes, which just give you like little exhibitions here and there. You know, that's probably where I couldn't imagine a casual player playing this game. But if they did, then that's where they would spend a lot of their time. There's, of course, multiplayer, which I didn't get to touch. But I will say that a new addition to 22 specifically is that it now has split screen multiplayer. So enjoy that.
Nice.
Then there's another really interesting one, and again, time travel. We're going to go all the way back to the year 2009 in the mode called 9 Season 2009, where you basically go through, you're essentially playing through a documentary. They talk about this real thing that happened, which, if you already know, that I'm not going to try and describe it to you because I'll get too much of it wrong and you'll get mad. And if you haven't heard of it, then I won't talk about it because it's boring. but it's one of the most exciting championships in MotoGP history, yo. There's 17 chapters, and they play documentary footage between them, and you change your protagonist depending on which race it is, and it will have the strictest of conditions, which is why I didn't beat this mode at all. you know, you're basically required to get first place because you're playing through history. So if you don't get first place, again, your brother and sister are going to like start erasing from the Polaroid. And, you know, you're going to end up, you know, running into a truck full of manure.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this game's sitting at $50. What are your thoughts on it?
Oh, man, this game is so beautiful. There's no soundtrack. It's only in the menus, and it's not even good there. So make sure you have something to listen to while playing this. I mean, get yourself a nice little rock and roll racing set list going for
kids with your rock and roll and your jazz.
Fusion. Yeah, yeah. On your Winamp. Yes. That's what I was trying to remember.
That is what I use every episode is Winamp.
Yes. Nice. It really whips the llama's ass.
It does.
But
still don't know what that is.
this game is so beautiful and like nice in like every way. It's just, it is a commitment. If you want to like actually play this game, you have to learn it. And once you learn it, it becomes very fun. So I'm going to say $50. It is a buy it for fans. If you've got all the other MotoGPs, then maybe the new stuff won't attract you that much. I don't know.
My guess is if you have all the other MotoGPs, you probably have this one too already.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, like I said, the new features, the split screen, that 2009 season is kind of a new thing, and I thought it was a really cool concept. Yeah, for people who are new to the genre and want to get good at it and want to enjoy like the thrill of not spilling your, you know, ass on the, you know, road every 5 seconds and then traveling back in time again, then this is a great time travel game for you. And, you know, maybe you're not ready for it, but your kids are going to love it.
Cool. All right. Well, next game is Chernobylite, developed by the Farm 51, published by All In Games, released April 21st on Xbox Series X and S and PS5 for $29.99. Chernobylite is a science fiction survival horror RPG set in the hyper-realistic 3D scanned wasteland of Chernobyl's exclusion zone. Explore a non-linear storyline in your search to uncover the truth of your tortured past. Pernell and Aki, both of you played this one. Who wants to start?
Please, I'll let Pernell go since...
Oh, I gotta do his... 5 other games tonight.
Yep. But this was your game. I've reviewed this before on here, so I'm back up.
I best that... Oof. So, Chernobylite is a game that I honestly find myself in a weird position when it comes to talking about it, because at the surface, I like the concept of it very much. You are a scientist who is who's breaking into the Chernobyl zone. I guess they have, it has a specific name, the Chernobyl something zone. Basically, the actual site of Chernobyl, but many years after the actual incident occurred. Your goal with coming back there is to locate your lost wife, who you believe is on the premises. And you come in initially with like 2 mercenaries that you hired to come back with you. And it also is already established that you used to work there too at some point in time before the Chernobyl disaster actually occurred. Things go wild. Some crazy guy shows up like in a teleportation style and just like kills one of the mercenaries. And you and the other guy kind of flee and regroup somewhere else through some weird interdimensional hopping stuff, because the game doesn't even explain. They just throw you right into that. Like, oh yeah, you can... He can open portals and mess. But then after that old thing happens, they kind of put you into the like the meat of the game, which is the essentially you working through a series of days trying to find a way to get into the facility, find the wife, and get out. And this is going to ultimately be done by way of something called a heist. And the heist being a plan that you'll have to formulate to get in and get out. And off the cuff, if you want to do this immediately, you're allowed to try. You can just say, let's go. It's just you and Oliver. You can go in there and you'll die. Like, you can't. This, if you, I think it's genuinely impossible to succeed or doing it immediately. I could be wrong about that. I didn't succeed. And that's all that matters to me.
Aki, did you succeed?
Yes. I always succeed everything. I'm amazing.
Well, that's a lie, but I still like you.
What? How is that a lie? Tell me how I lied. I'm amazing. Fuck you. How dare you?
So after you realize you can't do this heist thing and you go to the game proper, what ends up happening is that you are playing over a series of days. And on each particular day, you and initially just Oliver have to choose a sort of mission or a goal to undertake. There are about 6 different zones in this area. The zones themselves are always by the same name. Like, you don't go to new zones at any point in the game. It's those places. And you'll have a different reason for wanting to go to each one. It could be because of a mission that takes place there, like maybe a munitions drop that you need, which I'll get into why you might need certain things like this, but it might be a munitions drop you want to take on, or a food drop, or someone might actually task you with something. And I'll tell you about how that could happen a little bit later, too. And as a result, whatever one of these things you decide you need to go in there for, or also resources you might want to find in that zone that are more common in one zone than in others, you'll task your team, one of your teammates, with going to one of these places, and you'll go to the other. The trick is depending on the goal and how well fortified or equipped your teammate is, they may or may not succeed at this task. They could get captured or die out there. But of course, the ones that you choose to go on personally, the power is all yours, as Captain Planet would say. So it's up to you to determine that fate of your own outcome. So you'll go out here and you'll explore this world. And as you walk around the map, there's a gate at the top, like a compass sort of gate. A lot of like different icons telling you, hey, there's an event that could take place over here or over here. And there's a specific one that indicates this is where the main event's going to take place. And you're trying to traverse.
I never noticed that.
It's pretty much a wasteland because this is literally Chernobyl, and it's unfortunate. Everyone who's listening to this should know what the hell Chernobyl is if you don't pick up a goddamn history book. but you're running around Chernobyl areas trying to fulfill these goals while you're out here. So you have an item that you pretty much always have. It's pretty much an item scanner, and it serves two different functions while you're out and about. It shows you the rat levels of the area you're in at any given time. So while you're walking around, if the rat levels are too particularly high, you'll start taking like really deep damage. And for the record, that's also how the game keeps you from like leaving the zone that you end up in. Like that's the wall around the space. Super deadly radiation. But aside from that, you'll also just take slow damage and radiation poisoning, which you can cure with an item that you can create.
You can also lower radiation later in the game as well.
That's why Aki's what's up, girl. You know.
I occasionally pay attention when you're talking.
Oh, I appreciate it. Joe doesn't.
No, I don't.
I know you don't. So you'll be basically like being concerned about radiation with this thing, but it helps you keep track of it. But the other thing it does is there is a dial at the bottom of it that you can scroll through, which allows you to highlight different types of resource items that are existent out in the wild. You can choose the one you want to find, such as herbs or flammable items or chemicals. Hit the button. It sends out a pulse that kind of highlights those things if they're in your vicinity. Though, honestly, I feel like it does still highlight other things that aren't that object.
Well, there's a setting on there that lets you highlight a whole bunch of different objects at the same time.
Maybe that's what I'm doing. Cause like I've had moments where I go, I want to search for chemicals. And I push the button. It's like, oh, there's an herb.
Yeah, you're probably not actually getting it to the right setting then, would be my guess.
That plastic device. I mean, I looked at the scroll, my Bob. I'm looking at it. Like, it's these things.
Scroll, my Bob.
I mean, it doesn't really matter. The more stuff it points out to you, the more stuff you collect. You just collect it all. You don't leave anything unless you're running out of inventory space. And you're like, I specifically need this. Then you can drop shit. But otherwise, just pick everything the fuck up. Okay. And I mean everything. If you can pick it up.
Take it.
Do it.
Radiated food. What's that joke about? I'm like, how are you picking up food rations in a radiated zone? I don't think that's really safe to eat.
Well, I mean, they're rations.
Spicy.
They're stored in metal containers.
But like the image for it is a slice as a loaf of bread.
Well, yeah, that's the image for it, but that's it's a ration.
I'm like, they're eating bread.
God, you're nitpicking about stupid stuff. $30, Chernobylite. What do you two think?
I mentioned a few more quick things.
Okay, quick. We got to speed through this shit tonight. We're already like an hour 20 into this.
Go slower.
Oh my God, shut up. We'll cut you.
If you succeed at the mission, you'll go back to the base. They'll give you a grudge, not so much of a grade, but just like a wrap of like, hey, this is the stuff you found. Here's the result of that quest. And it'll also show you the result of what your friends or your comrades went on and what they accomplished on their mission. Sometimes you will also... All right, rephrase that. After you go through all that, you'll also have to dole out food rations that you have in your inventory. And depending on how you decide to dole those out, that could have different results on the morale of your teammates, how they perceive you, and how their own psyche levels deal with the outcome. And their health, too, because if they go hungry, they'll start just losing health.
So will you.
Which I don't want to do. I feed myself.
Oh, never bother feeding yourself. Everybody, if you play this game, one of the first things you need to, because you can make things in your base, by gathering resources. One of the first things you can make is something that kills you, keeps you on the same day, and gives you all your health and stuff back. What you do is you make that as soon as fucking possible. You never eat anything, and you just kill yourself at the end of the day. Start off at the beginning of the day, because everything you've collected sticks around. Everything the other players have gone out and obtained sticks around. So you just keep doing that over and over, so you stay on like the like sixth day for like
14 Chris, you should have said that one out loud.
What do you say?
I was just gonna say this is sounding like a Tom Cruise movie.
Live Die Repeat, because that does happen in this game, so it is a Tom Cruise movie.
Review Die Repeat.
because if you die. In the event that you don't have any of these EpiPens that Aki's talking about, and you die, depending on how you die, two things
I'm
can
happen. I'm not talking about an EpiPen.
One, you could get captured by the soldiers that are roaming around, and you have to escape by finding your stuff in the base, and then creating a teleporter to get out.
That is actually really fun.
It is, but I did enjoy doing that. Or the alternative, which I only had happen once, was you go into like this weird interdimensional field, and you can kind of redo certain elements of your day.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Outcome.
Yeah, if you build the item I was talking about, that's what you're doing. Is you just kill yourself and go into that. There's some other hazards in the level that you, I guess, didn't get to.
Spooky freaking neon jerks?
Yeah, the monsters. There are these alien interdimensional monstrosities that come out and they turn invisible and occasionally turn uninvisible. And at both points, they will try to kill the shit out of you if they find you. The longer you spend in the game, the more they show up. You can also build something in the level to lower that as well to prevent as many of them from showing up. But
are you really good at doing that? Because one thing I sucked at, but it's maybe because I've had that thing with hoarding items and prep. But
I hoarded everything too. I
know what to build, like in the field proper. Like I know I could build a stove to make some healing salve if I had some herbs on hand from the trekking in the
field. I never bothered with that.
I feel better than it. It was like,
I'm a stealth gamer. This game was easy for me.
You know what's really not easy? Pretty. Giving it a review, apparently. $30. What do the two of you think?
It's fantastic. I love it. Everyone will probably like it if they're even halfway decent at stealth games. If you absolutely hate stealth games, you're probably not going to like this.
That's a good call, because I can definitely say, in seconding from Aki's point of view, if the gunplay in this game is not spectacular, but it's not intended to be. You're a lover, not a fighter. And game is meant to be stealth-based, so you're kind of skulking about as best you can.
You're stalking about, stabbing people in the throat. It's great.
Nice.
That's like the only thing, and maybe I'm missing, maybe there's more that I didn't get to, but I wish there was more enemy variety, though. Like, even if it's just Gnar soldiers and the aliens, I wish there may be a different types of Gnar soldiers, maybe.
There sadly isn't. There's only three enemies in the game, and one of them is a boss character that can show up, and you pretty much just run from him like a little bitch.
Gladly. Stealth ninja runs. That Naruto run away from him. I think this game is a solid title as well. Just cool. Note that you're coming into this game. It's not a brawler game. It's not an FPS. It is a stealth RPG adventure game.
Cool beans. Should I put my lower teeth in?
No.
You're fine.
No, leave them out. Shay.
It's up to you. I don't really care, but you sound fine, so.
Okay, I'm just wondering.
Yeah, we understand you.
I know you understand me. I was just
Well, I'm not bored. Watching the stream. Just
next
I
game
have
to
it
talk
on.
About is Parkasaurus, developed and published by Wash Bear Studio, released April 28th on Switch for $24.99. Parkasaurus is a dinosaur tycoon management sim where you take care of your dinosaurs by constructing well-designed exhibits, researching specialized technologies, and maximizing profits to expand into the ultimate dinosaur theme park. Do you favor development for your guests or your dinosaurs? Unfortunately, Brooke can't be here with us this week, so we got the next best thing. Our buddy Norg is going to read the review, so we're going to cut to that nice. Right now.
Parkasaurus Review, on behalf of Brooke. This was my very first tycoon game. Well, that's sort of true. I've loaded up several tycoon-type games in the past, but never made it out of the tutorial, to be honest. I've only tried a couple, and I was pretty overwhelmed by all of the options, and just figured it wasn't my thing. Same story with Civ games. Actually, or as I like to call them, Humanity Tycoon games. Has this ever happened to you? Well, if you've had a similar experience, I actually really encourage you to give Parkasaurus a try. The tutorial was easy, engaging, and just plain fun. I knew what I was doing the whole time, what I was supposed to be doing, how things worked, and I was even given enough creative control to where when the tutorial ended, I was surprised to remember that it was a tutorial. And it even had a really good sense of humor, especially while it was showing me how to tranquilize an escaped dinosaur before it ate all the kids. I was all in, and I definitely played this one more than I had to give it a fair review. Faithful listeners will recall that I've had some issues lately with review games for Switch not exactly being optimized for Switch. Rest assured, that is not the case with this title. Everything worked beautifully, the controls were perfect, and it just really felt like a game designed to work super well on Switch. So much so, that when I looked it up after trying to see if it had been released previously for other systems, I was surprised that it had. While I'm brand new to the Tycoon games, my partner is not, and he's been harping on me to play them for quite some time now. I had him hang out with me while I played through the tutorial, and his impression of this game is also that it's just a really good little tycoon game. So while this is, in fact, Baby's first tycoon game, I am confident that it stands out from its peers as a colorful, fun, and well-made one. I will be trying more tycoon titles because I enjoyed this one so much. This game has a lot going on. There's a world map where you can experience a full campaign of global dinosaur situations. Abandoned dinosaur park discovered, complete with extremely hungry forgotten dinosaurs about to break loose. Needs repair. Horrifying. Dinosaur park in Toronto, where there are a lot of rivers. Or something. You'll hire employees to run the park, but you get to look through the resumes first to try to make the right choice on your entry-level employees' stats. When you create a dinosaur exhibit, you're able to alter the terrain to the dinosaur's preference. My Stegosaurus was a picky Nicky. I just made that up, and it's definitely going to catch on. And just had to have a rainforest to live in. What a prima donna. I added grass to cover the entirety of his exhibit, and then added water terrain until the terrain type changed. I could track my progress toward getting a rainforest biome on an XY graph. That sounds more complicated than it is. It was very organic and helpful to be able to check the grid for progress there. The game also has little mini-games spread throughout. You can build a science building and use the time portal to discover new and exciting dinosaurs. And in doing so, you'll need to hack away at a battleship-esque grid to try to get lucky finding fossils. If you hired a scientist with above-average digging stats, they might allow you to dig a Tetris shape of blocks per dig, instead of just single blocks. Finally, I'll just say that with a game that's this well made, all the other features you can expect to be pretty premium. Pixel graphics look great, music is bumpin', and sound effects are really snappy and arcadey fun. This actually reminded me of one of the first mobile games I ever played, especially in how cute and colorful it was, and how satisfying all the sound effects are. I realize now Disco Zoo, the mobile game I loved, don't judge, is just like a way, way watered-down version of this idea for a game, minus a lot of actual tycoon-y gameplay. If you remember and enjoyed Disco Zoo, this is a kind of spiritual successor to that sort of vibe and is much more fun and engaging. The verdict? Buy it. That's it. Just get it, if you like tycoon games or might like them. Get it if you are like me and liked silly games like Disco Zoo and are ready to take the next easy step up. Buy it if you just really want a nice little resource management game that works incredibly well for Switch. Or buy it to get me to shut up, because if you say you like tycoon-y games, I'm going to be harping on you until you do.
Thank you, George. Thank you so much. Chris, anything you want to chime in with?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sorry. That reading was so fast.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I know. Yeah, it's like
it was
editing.
Amazing. It was hilarious.
Yeah. Thank you, George.
Yeah, it's almost like I don't know what the fuck was said at all.
I know. Totally.
Yeah, I'm just going to add that I also like this game. I didn't make it too far past the tutorial, but, you know, I got my people in here. I've had to hire security to, you know, tranquilize some dinosaurs and stuff like that. Pretty cool. My first move, actually, in this game was, so in the tutorial, which, again, is brilliant, they have you, like, build a fence and then put down some grass, and they're like, okay, now put some water. Huh?
Can you tranquilize people, too, or just dinosaurs?
If you can, then I haven't gotten that far yet.
Damn. Because, like, every time in one of these games, the dinosaurs get out, all I want to do is tranquilize the people instead.
Right? Just keep the people from spazzing out.
Exactly.
Can't see you if you don't move. And then, yeah, you're on the ground not moving. Dinosaur doesn't see you. Anyway, so yeah, it has you build the fence, build the grass, and then put down some water so that it becomes a rainforest biome. Well, I kind of misunderstood the assignment, and so I put water on every square inch of the grass, and it's like knee-deep water. So as my young Triceratops named Kobe was growing up, he or she was basically having to wade around in water like constantly. So I'm not great at this game.
So it had amazing legs is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. That dinosaur is going to grow up very strong and very angry. So yeah, basically, and like Brooke, I also don't have much experience with tycoon games. But I did play a lot of SimCity on the Super Nintendo, and you'll have to basically triple or quadruple the menus of that game to come close to this one. But I like how it's laid out. I like that you kind of have like your top menu that kind of gives you your different places that you can go, like your shops for vegetables, meat, eggs, etc., and then like to your office where you can hire people, which is kind of hilarious, and then like, you know, your weird ass portal that I still don't quite know what it does, and then you know, all your other stuff, and then, you know, you've got your actual like building menu, which is, you know, right there on the sidebar, and then your goals and whatnot. Like, I like how this game's laid out. I will say one thing about it being on the Switch that I kind of wish it had is that I wish it had touchscreen, because it's very much built up like, you know, menus are on the corner of the screen, and like they look like mobile icons, like again, like Brooks.
And it's not touchscreen?
But there's no touchscreen in this game. Wow. And I was very surprised by that, because I was like, this perfectly looks like something, and especially because you have to drag certain things, like when I was drowning my young dinosaur, I had to like drag the the water all the way across the yard there, and yeah, it was like
don't waterboard the dinos, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I've learned, lesson learned. I mean, my own hubris will be my demise, trust me. In the game's final chapter, something terrible is going to happen to me, like what happened to John Hammond in the book Jurassic Park, but not the film. Spoilers for a 30-year-old book. Anyways, no, I do like this game a lot. I think it is well worth it. I think that, yeah, like I said, on Switch, text is tiny in undocked mode, in portable mode, and it could use touchscreen. But honestly, this still is, I echo Brooke by saying this is a perfect kind of game for the Switch and for, you know, playing at night, or, you know, picking up and going and, you know, having fun with. So yeah, I give it a buy it.
Cool. Sounds like a compose it. Oh my God, I just put my lower teeth in and I can't talk at all. Oh,
just listen to us. See?
Yep, they're out. Fuck it.
Let your friends be your guy.
Next game to talk about is Layer Section and Galactic Attack S Tribute, developed by Taito Corporation and City Connection, published by City Connection, released April 28th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $29.99. Layer Section, the home console port of arcade game Rayforce, is back with new features and online ranking. Use the new lock-on laser function to defeat multiple enemies at once for a higher score in this gorgeous 2D vertical shooting game. Who's yawning?
Apparently not me.
Yeah, are you yawning?
Yeah, I yawned. I'm tired.
We all are. It's a long night.
I haven't had enough ice cream in my system today, which means I haven't had any.
Pernell,
it's
you and I played
4 years.
Pernell, you and I played this one, and Chris, I know you are like the genius of all things shmup. So, do you want to give us like a history lesson on what Rayforce is?
I honestly don't know Rayforce that well.
Really?
It's a shmup.
Yeah, I have. I mean, Taito Shooters, I love Taito Shooters, of course. Like I said, Darius is my favorite series. I have Ray Storm on the PS1, which is kind of more a three-quarter angle type thing. And yeah, it was really fun. I beat it a couple of times. But I honestly, I couldn't really tell you much of the history of Rayforce as far as it goes. I just know it's a series,
and
it's confusing.
Off the top, is I think it was ported to the PS1, unless that is Ray Storm. It was ported to the PS1 by Working Designs.
Yeah, it was ported, and like, yeah, there's Ray Storm, Ray Force, and then another Ray thing. I have to look at it now because I don't remember what the other one's called. But yeah, Ray Series is, I guess, what it's called. Ray Crisis.
So Pernell, what did you think of this game?
I thought it was a fine game, but my only problem is that, especially after coming after that game I reviewed last week, I just wish, like, the gunplay involved just having your main gun that you can juice up by picking up items that are floating in the sky after you kill things. And then you have that kind of grenade that attacks enemies on the ground that has been around since, like, Xevious. But aside from those two attacks, and maybe a bomb that I just never use because I'm always stingy with bombs.
It basically is just the two attacks. The thing I liked with the whole lock-on thing is it would target things on the ground that would ultimately make their way up to you. So if you shot them on the ground, you wouldn't have to deal with them up in the air.
Yeah, which was nice, though. Sometimes they didn't even come off the ground, so it was just a good way to score extra points. Or yeah, it was like that was on the ground. You got it while it was on the ground in that regard before it could blow shots at you. Like, the game was fun, but the weird thing about this kind of topic, and I think Chris would kind of agree with me, is that for the most part, as long as the bullet patterns aren't bad, most shmups are fun just because they're shmups. Like, they don't need to do much aside from having good music, good enemy/bullet patterns. But sometimes I'm also looking for just like that little extra tweak, that thing that makes it stand out. And I felt like this played fairly similar to like other games, like similar to a lot of other games like it, but it was still fun. Just, I couldn't think of anything that really made it stand out for me.
I think the lock-on is really the only thing that makes it stand out. That and the whole getting a big multiplier to get as high a score as you can. I think the thing that really makes this game is the features that they throw in there at you. They have the basic stuff, like you could adjust how many, you could add credits to get up to 99 and not worry about continuing. Difficulty settings, they have a rewind. I wish the rewind was just mapped to a button instead of being in a menu. I think it makes you, I can kind of understand that it makes you want to use it sparingly, but I wish it was just mapped to like right bumper or left bumper and you would just rewind right then and there instead of having to pause, go to rewind, select your scene, let it load. I don't know. Overall, though, $30 on this one. Japanese shooters always have a high price, so I don't see a problem paying $30 for this one, considering you're getting two games in one, basically. Pernell, what are your thoughts?
I'd give it a genuine try at least, because, like I said, it's fun. I mean, I had fun when I was playing it, but if you're a shmupaholic, you've probably done this dance before, but if you want one more go of it, your money will be well spent here, so.
Cool. All right. Next up is Wildcat Gun Machine, developed by Chunky Box Games, published by Daedalic Entertainment, released May 4th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $14.99. Enter a bullet-hell dungeon crawler where you take on hordes of disgusting flesh beasts with a wide variety of guns, giant mech robots, and cute kittens. Chris, what's going on in Wildcat Gun Machine?
There is a cute kitten, and you can pet it.
Yay! Buy it.
Yeah. Especially, yeah, exactly. I'm not planning on going too much further than that. So this is a bullet hell twin stick shooter where you run around as an unnamed protagonist, but she looks like she's pretty cool. You know, she's got like you know, she's not white. That's nice. And she also has like an eye patch. That's also cool. And the eye patch has Band-Aids on it. I don't know. I think that might be a joke. Anyways. So, yeah, you run around this, you know, basically a dungeon, which has a map that you can call upon at any point, which is kind of nice. You've got four distinct sections that you can run into in this giant mechanical building. And then you shoot monsters as they appear. Why? I don't know. But, like, you know, they're enemies. You got to shoot them. And then there's a kind of central checkpoint. And, you know, there's, like I said, regular monsters, big boss monsters. Everything's kind of done up in this, like, nice animated, very cartoony style. She's, like, really chibi. Like, even though she looks, like, really badass on the cover and everything. Yeah, she's, like, basically, like, a chibi once you actually play it. And it's got cool animation and stuff, like... And yeah, the main thing about it is like going to be the weapons. There's some regular weapons which have, you know, ammo counts and things like that. You know, and they fall under the usual, you know, infinite ammo pistol, shotgun, which does a spread shot. You know, y'all know. But the gun machine part is where, like, basically, if she meets like a certain criteria, you know, defeating and like basically filling up a gauge, then you get to turn into like just this, you know, you got like this amazing like gun arm type of power up thing that lets you like just blow stuff away for like a limited time. And it's really, really cool to like enact. It's also got things like, you know, you can explode barrels and stuff. And, you know, there's a little bit of an interactive environment situation going on here. Ultimately, yeah, it's fun, really snappy. And it's got like a, you know, it's got a nice style to it. It's kind of that, you know, like gory cartoon kind of situation going on there.
Yeah.
It's good to play. It doesn't punish you too bad for dying. It just takes away all of your like... your points for upgrades, but the upgrades aren't really, you know, anything too important. Mostly it's all about just, you know, spinning around and helicoptering enemies and, you know, peppering them with, you know, them good old white dots. So yeah, I had a good time with it. It's not too deep, but honestly, for, you know, $15, I'm not expecting deep.
Cool. Your official verdict?
I say this is a buy it for your twin stick shooter fans. You know, it would definitely, it's a nice little side dish to something like Enter the Gungeon, which of course is a much more like beloved kind of title, but at least this one's like kind of up there. So nice. I found nothing wrong with it. It didn't like super entrance me, but that's okay. I think it's a worthy title.
Well, beans. All right. Next up is Trigon. What?
I finished the Stanley Parable today.
Did you?
Yep. I got commitment just a little bit before the podcast started, and I finally managed to get the 10-year thing.
Oh, you waited 10 whole years, didn't you?
Yes, I did. You it was fucking so cheater. Long. It took me a long time to figure out how to actually get that to fucking work.
Was it worth it?
Yes, because now I have another game finished.
But was it worth it in that I could play a completely different game and have a game finished? Because I've never played it. But if people claim it's...
Oh, you're asking me if it's worth playing. Okay, yeah. Yeah,
it's, fuck it. The Stanley Parable, developed and published by Crows. I don't remember the release date. The price is, I think, $25. Can you fucking tell us about it? Might as well.
Okay. In Stanley Parable, you play as Stanley, and... you have a narrator who's basically telling you everything that's going on around you. You're the only person in your office building, and you're trying to figure out what the fuck's going on. You can either do what he tells you to do, or you can really, really piss the narrator off. I always vote piss the narrator off.
That's what you select when... I guess I'm the narrator. The choice is to piss me off.
Yeah, pretty much. my entire life is all, you about know...
pissing off people.
specifically pissing off men. I do not respect authority what the fuck soever. And see, this is sometimes what happens when you have daddy issues. If daddy ain't there, sometimes you really want to please men. Other times,
it's a big fuck you to men from that point forward, just so you guys know. And there's more endings to this game than you have fingers and toes, so it's all about pissing off the narrator, mostly, just in new and fun ways. It's fantastic. And eventually you unlock a door that says new content that you can go into, and you can see the new content.
Well, don't spoil the new content.
Yeah. It's just, you know, you get access to one item and a whole bunch more new endings that show up after you've gone through it. That's it.
That's what the game needs, you get access. More endings.
Yeah, that's pretty much all it is. The level design does change just ever so slightly, but that's it. It's pretty much the exact same level, just now you have a bucket you can pick up.
Yeah, I like how they describe it on the store page. The Stanley Parable is a game that plays you. $25, your thoughts?
I really like it. I think it's fucking hilarious.
Pernell, you going to buy it?
We'll see.
Yes.
If you know Pernell.
Buy it. It's funny.
Did the review work?
It's funny.
Did this whole aside impromptu review, did it work? Are you going to buy it?
It is on my wish list. So when I can get the price down a little, it's my baby, mom.
You bitch. All right, next game to talk about is Trigon Space Story, developed by Cerner Tech, published by GameForge 4D, released April 28th on Steam for $19.99. Trigon Space Story sees you take command of your very own spaceship, carry out tactical battles, defend your vessel against space pirates, and escape from enemy territory. On your voyages, you'll face a slew of tricky decisions in your quest to uncover the mystery of the galaxy. Pernell, what is the mystery of the galaxy, and does it involve the Stanley Parable?
Hell if I know. I'm more likely to get Parable than I did in this game, because woof, fucking hard. But enough about me being terrible at the game. What is the actual game? Well, the idea behind this game is that you are not even really so much piloting the ship. You're pretty much telling everyone on the ship what to do. At the beginning of the game, you choose a race. At the beginning, you can only choose humans, but there are three other unlockable races that you can choose, or species that you can choose. And each ship and selection comes with a crew and a choice of ship.
Are any of the other species cute?
I don't think so. And if they work,
damn,
for long, because they're going to die. They're all going to die.
The only screenshots I see are all like spaceships. And she's like, are the aliens hot?
Well, I mean, in a lot of games, I would understand when you're like, oh, it's about spaceships. But in this game, honestly, she's not off the mark, because you engage more with the crew than the ship. Well, correction.
Oh, yeah, bitch.
All equally, because this is a crew-based game, not a ship-based game. Because when you start a session up, if you choose campaign, they have like an actual narrative that you're playing through as far as like the story events you're progressing. But the galaxy itself is randomized. It's a randomly generated galaxy. You are on your ship, and you start out in a location. There are a number of rooms on your ship, and these rooms each have different functional features that they provide your ship with. For example, there's the actual, you know, pilot's quarters. The crew member that's in that room gets like actual benefits if they're specialized in like piloting, like if they're a pilot class person. There's like a medical bay where crew members can heal. There's like the artillery bay where weapon fire takes place. And if you put a person in there, weapon fire will go a little bit quicker, and so on and so forth. There's like a bunch of different rooms and a bunch of different functions. And what happens is when you're in a nebula, you are generally hit with a number of different random events. It could be like you're getting attacked by a rival ship, and I'll explain ship battles in a second. A series of choices could come into play. Whoa, fox! Cute little fox baby.
What?
There's a fox running out.
What the fuck?
A baby fox.
Did you get a picture of it or anything?
Huh?
Did you get a picture of it or anything?
Nah, and I don't want to go after it because that thing will probably freak out.
God damn it.
Boom. Next time, though, next time, Aki, if it weren't my review call at this moment, I'd have ran out there after the fox to get a photo.
I thought you did run after it.
It was a fox. You should have anyways, to be honest.
They start screaming.
I would have left immediately.
Get back here. I want to pet you. Oh, my God, my eyes.
Not even my eyes. You ever heard a female fox scream before?
No.
Yes.
They say it sounds like a woman's being murdered, and I'm not even making that up. The first time I heard it was 3 in the morning. I just heard this screaming. I got out of bed and ran outside thinking I was going to go help somebody. It was a fox somewhere screaming.
Yeah. And I've had a pet coyote. I don't mind the concept of scooping up a fox and having a pet fox. I'm fine with that.
If it didn't have rabies potentially, or it didn't outrun me, I probably would too. They are cute. And I would totally
love them. Oh, so cute.
So for now, what the fuck is Trigon's space story?
Everything? I'm sorry, Joe. I am. I'm so everything. I'm so sorry.
So, I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it, because there's like a surprise number of elements to it. So,
I see a lot of people compare it to FTL.
So, I think, yes, a good way to start this. So, to my understanding, FTL is a crew-based roguelike game. This game is also a crew-based roguelike game. Because when you get into a situation, remember I mentioned the random events that occurs when you're in a certain area, when you're in different parts of the galaxy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those types of random events can be a ship-on-ship battle. And an opponent shows up and wants to kill you and rob you of all your stuff, and you have to fight back. So, when the battle commences, you can pause the game to get yourself some bearings, unless you're on Iron Man mode, in which case the game says, nope, no pause button. And you are then tasked with deciding what to do. You can load up guns if you have them equipped, and you can target specific parts of the opponent's ship, maybe to attack their crew members or attack specific rooms in the ship to hopefully remove the functionality of those rooms. You can set locations on fire on their ship, which will in turn make their crew have to run around and put the fires out. And you're basically just trying to make these good decisions on like how you want to best engage the opponent's ship. Now, keep in mind, at least in my opinion, the attacking part isn't the big deal. Like, you'll pretty much set your guns to set it and forget it, unless you have a gun that requires ammo, in which case you have to reload it at some point. The real meat and potatoes is what's happening on your ship, because the enemy will start firing shots at you. You have a hull HP meter and a shield meter. If your shields hold up, your hull doesn't take damage. Typical, you know, game like that. But if the shields go down, for as long as they're not charged, you'll start taking hull damage. And if the hull gets destroyed, your ship gets destroyed. Depending on how the bullets laying on the ship and what types of properties they have, your ship could catch fire in certain areas. When that happens, you might have to send a crew member to go put the fire out. Or if it's in a good part of the ship where you can actually have access, you can open up airlock doors and let the oxygen get blown out of the room and put the fire out that way. You will be sending your crew members all over the damn place trying to manage every particular issue you could possibly have. Ion storms, which will short out a room. You might have a room where the oxygen level just goes away. And if there's a man in there, that will suffocate and die. There's a lot of pandemonium that takes place in this game, and I've never, ever felt comfortable in one of these battles. Not a bad way. I mean, as in just like a ship is panicking. And also, whatever member of your crew is designated as the pilot, if that person gets killed in combat, it's an immediate game over. So look out for that. So you'll be launching volleys across the other ship. You'll be sending people from room to room on the ship of your own, trying to determine when, you know, based on the need for them to work. If you find yourself in a situation where the battle is not going your way, or you just don't feel like dealing with it, the way you ultimately leave a sector is by charging up your hyperspace gauge and going into hyperspace, teleporting to another galaxy. Another galaxy involving new events and the like, but it also costs fuel and food to do this. So you have to be prepared to pay the cost for that. And if you don't have the means to pay the cost, guess what? Game over, because your ship may starve and you have no fuel to fly through space. But
like the Oregon Trail in space.
In space, yes. And it's freaking hectic, because when you're not in combat, there's still things to manage. Like, you got to manage a health level, so you can like send people to the sick bay to heal up. You have scrap, you have food, you have fuel, and you have money. You can use scrap to level up components of your ship so that you can, say, have enough energy to power your shield gauge. you want to level up your shield gauge, but now if you don't have enough power running through the ship, you can't power up the shield gauge despite leveling it up. So it's this interesting dance of like leveling up the energy levels to balance out what you level up the actual specs of the ship to be, including oxygen levels.
Oxygen
levels. Oh, hush you up, you.
Just oxygen. That's it.
That's the oxygen get. People breathe, baby. Airlocks. There's a lot of crazy like options in the game that you can level up. Also, every once in a while, you might come across a space station, and that's where you can use your currency, the actual coins, to buy additional food, additional scrap, new guns, new ammunition. You can hire new crew members. You want to hire freaking crew members. Oh, my God, you want to hire crew members. And it's just it also heal your ship, repair your ship damage. The game itself isn't complex in the sense of describing as far as like what you have to do, because once you get a handle on I have to manipulate people on this ship to do things, the game becomes managing your ship people when situations occur, making decisions when you go from node to node, knowing when to go into hyperdrive and when to not, and resource management, typical roguelike stuff. But again, the ship battles are rough. And for what I felt, they can swing either way very easily. Like on one of my runs, the first ship I came across beat the shit out of me. Like it wasn't a contest. And then like later on, I had a run. And there was a good like four or five ships. Like I thought the game was really hard, and yet now I'm actually succeeding. What's going on with this?
Progress.
I think it was just the balancing is weird. Like sometimes the enemies are too hard, sometimes they're not. I could have gotten a little better, but I do believe that first ship I encountered on that game was just really that difficult. Like it was just a jerkbag ship.
Yeah, well, this is something that originally launched in early access in September 2020, just hit full release April 28th. It's sitting at $20. What are your thoughts?
Honestly, if you like Follow the Light and you want more, it's a guaranteed buy. Just get the damn thing. But if you know nothing about Follow the Light and you just say, hey, cool ship game with crewmates and stuff, I think it's still at least a buy in that sense. I think they put a lot of love into it. And there's fun to be had. It's just there's a bit of a learning curve in the sense of like being used to like keeping track of your people on the ship and stuff, because there's certain iconography that can throw you for a loop too. Also, it has controller support, but my God, just use a mouse. You'll thank yourself for it. Using a keyboard in this game is a pain in the ass. So mouse and keyboard.
Yay. All right, next up is Hunter X, developed and published by Orange Popcorn, released April 28th on Steam for $14.99. Hunter X is an action-adventure game full of spirited battles. Use various styles of weapons and magic to experience your own fighting style and explore a great world. Chris and Purnell, both of you played this. Who wants to start?
Chris. Yeah, I guess I will.
All right, Chris, Purnell go for it.
Had soloed the last one and the next one. Okay, so this is a basically a Castlevania type game. I'm not even going to say Metroidvania. This is no Metroid about this. You play as Lady, and I don't know her name. And she's like, they say a teenager. I don't know. Whatever. Nobody cares about her.
Girl.
She's a purple-haired warrior, and she is your character for this game.
Just won me over.
Yeah.
He's buying it right now. Purple hair, I'm fucking sold.
So basically, it's a 3D models on 2D gaming kind of thing. It's a side scroller. I think Bloodstained, really, but you know, maybe with a little less like artisticness. It's more about like the straight up action. So you fight monsters, mostly much larger than you, either with your melee weapons, which you start off with like this kind of katana, and then you eventually pick up other weapons through enemy drops and treasure chests and whatnot. And as you go through, you basically, you know, you go through tutorial level, and then you start like, you know, the real game. And there is a it's basically all these interconnected, you know, boards that are kind of, you know, linked together, but you can like go backwards through them, of course, when you get new powers, such as, actually, I don't know if you get a double jump in this one, but I'm pretty sure you do. but you know, I got like an air dash and stuff like that. But you know, anyways, but you know, you like see like, oh, there's a treasure chest here that's way too high up. So, you know, I'm going to come back here at some point. So you basically get your choice between like your melee weapons, which are pretty cool, or your arcane weapons, which are like, again, kind of, you know, some of them are Castlevania themed. Some of them are like summoning like a giant sword, for instance, which is very much Order of Ecclesia, which is my favorite Castlevania, by the way. So I was won over by that. Action's really nice and tight. I quite liked it. Like I said, some of the bosses are like room sized or larger. So, you know, you've got your big old like Kraid style battles in here. Whoops, I said Metroid. but
you said Kraid, I heard you, with arms wide open, right?
Kraid. And his arms are wide open.
With arms wide open.
There are a whole bunch of ladies in this with a very massive boobs. I approve.
Oh, yeah, Jesus. Yeah, there is that.
He does.
Yeah, apparently the number of items is around 170, which is kind of cool. I didn't get them all, but I really had fun with this one, like, you know, the action stuff and everything. And like, whenever you have a save spot, they also bring up this other sort of, it's like, I guess it's a save statue, and then there's a second statue where you can trade like these points, basically experience points that you get from enemies, into improving your stats, and you can choose to like put in like melee stats or like arcane stats, you know, speed stats, because there's a lot of dodging and jumping and, you know, getting out of the way of enemies in this game, because, you know, Dark Souls is a thing now.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Are there like any armors or anything that you can equip that changes the character's visual appearance at all?
I didn't get any. Do you know, Pernell?
That's a shame.
I didn't come across anything like that either myself.
It so much cooler.
Yeah, I thought I saw something in some screenshots, but I don't know. Doesn't seem that way. I don't think there's any like equipables like that. But
like the only thing that bugged me in regards to equipables is like, and I guess maybe I was expecting it to be this way because of Symphony of the Night in games of this ilk, but there are different weapons you find in the game that you can equip. They have different stats and different elemental properties, like new fire damage or dark damage or what have you. But they all, aside from looking different, they all perform the same way. They all have that same arc swing. I was hoping that when I found the hammer, like my first hammer, that it would maybe be slower but more powerful. Maybe a dagger that just kind of stabs out straight and quickly. No matter what type of weapon you find, they all have that swing. And I wish they had different behaviors.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's a little less polished than something that you would expect from, like, you know, Iga or, you know, Konami in its heyday or anything like that. But like I said, for its low price, I was definitely charmed by this one. And like I said, the controls are really tight, and the like actual animation and like gameplay is really smooth. Frame rate never suffered or anything like that. So, you know, for what it is, I quite liked it.
Cool. Well, $15, your official verdict?
I'd say, yeah, it's a buy it for fans of the like kind of more action-y and stat growthy Castlevanias.
For now?
I also think it's a buy it as well. I enjoyed playing it. I enjoy the music in it, and the combat is fast and fluid. And I also feel like leveling up takes place very quickly. Like you feel like you're constantly getting a little stronger.
Yeah, they definitely like they don't hold levels like a carrot. Like you basically, as soon as you save the game, you're almost guaranteed to at least have like one or two levels like in your pocket. So it's pretty cool.
Cool. And there appears to be some kind of issue on Steam with the game where it is temporarily down while they work on some kind of issue with a similar product triggering a antivirus warning. So,
well, no antivirus, no problem.
There you go.
Do not suggest that. That's bad. No, don't do that.
I'm just kidding.
But keep your eyes peeled when that one's back on the store. It sounds like a good one.
This is now on my wish list. Thank you. It's one of another 400 games I have on there. Gotta have so much.
Well, there you go. It's on the wish list. We got a wish list. Yay, we did it.
Yeah, it's not very fan servicey, but it does have jiggle physics, so you might enjoy.
I like jiggle physics. They're really good. And hopefully at some point they'll add outfits that you can put on the characters, because that was one of my favorite things of Bloodstained Rituals of the Night, was that you could equip her with stuff and it would change her outfit, and that just made the game so much more fun for me, because I'm weird and I don't care.
No, that's totally legit.
Cool. Really, all right. Well, again. Next game is Dandy and Randy DX, developed by Asterisk Game Studio.
Are they boyfriends?
I don't know. We'll find out. Published by Rattlelake Games. Released April 29th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $6.99. Dandy and Randy are a couple of archaeologists who are in a huge pickle. They owe a ton of money to their bank, and unless they can figure out a way to pay it back, they're done for. Luckily, they have just received the information about a mysterious fabled precious stone showing up on a faraway island. Can they find it, pay back their debts, and become rich in the process? It's up to you to find out. Actually, it's up to Purnell. Purnell, did you find out?
I did. What I found out is that the game is actually kind of fun.
Are the characters gay, though?
I played the game I'm about to compare to, but I'm basing it off of screenshots.
I don't think so, Aki, by the way.
Aw.
It reminds me a lot of the SNES game Goof Troop. And the visual style of the game, and also the whole, like, how I perceived it to be from Nintendo Power, like, you're moving room to room, and a lot of the puzzles are, like, pushing blocks to hit switches and stuff. But the way the game works is that you end up on, you play through a series of, like, sections of an island. It's, like, five or six sections on the island. And for each one, you're tasked with moving from screen to screen, clearing out whatever's there. If you can find money, find money. If there's a treasure chest, open the chest, whatever. Locating four different keys, which are used to unlock different light-colored gates hidden throughout the store. Not really hidden, but present throughout the level. To beat the mini-boss, in some cases in the final boss on each level, and then move forward. Similar to like how a Zelda game would work, though, is that each area has one unique tool that you can find. And unique. Once you find that tool, it's used to traverse the rest of the level and also future levels in the game. You cycle through those treasures with the left and right bumper buttons. So, for example, at the beginning of the game, you just start out with a shovel. And the shovel is kind of hokey. You go from an area that you can just walk around and dig in hopes of money coming out of the ground. But then later you will find things like a hookshot or a boomerang or a hammer. And these all have stage traversing, you know, perks and abilities. Sadly, none of them can be used to kill an enemy. The only way you can kill actual enemies is by picking things up off the ground or out of the ground in the case of vegetables and throwing them at the enemies to kill them. As you're exploring this area, the areas in the game, you will come across various bits of money, whether it be in coin form or bag form. There's a pig who is hiding around the different areas of the island. He runs a shop, and in that shop, he will sell you different items that will help you with your journey. Mostly health restoring items, but he will also sell you like an additional heart for your heart meter. Or honestly, that's all I really bought from was additional heart. So yeah, it's also the most expensive thing he sells is $5,000. Though I think it's funny he sells words of encouragement for $1,500. What a capitalist bitch! hey, gotta make money on the island because as he said, he's saving up to go to college. So da da da. But the odd thing about this game is that there's not a ton going on with it. I mean, most of the room puzzles involve hitting a crystal with a boomerang or pushing a block over to a switch or a couple of blocks onto a hidden switch. But it's still somewhat fun. It reminds me, like I said, of Goof Troop and that old classic 16-bit graphical style of just rocking around these like top-down maps. The music is good in the game. It's quirky. You can come across other critters on the different stages that can be unlocked to be used as well, in addition to Dandy and Randy. They don't do anything different, but it doesn't matter. It's just a different cute animal you can play as.
Yay, cute animals.
You can go back to areas that you've already beaten with newly accessed tools to find other stuff, maybe some more money hidden under rocks or some secret like rooms or things of that nature. But ultimately, it's a light, straightforward game that I frankly came to enjoy. The only thing I hate about it is that money is very tight in this game. That pig is no cheapie.
No, you want to know the secret? Dig up the flowers.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. Yeah, dug up all the flowers. But then in each area, there's like something like that. Like the desert, it would be like the water puddles. And like there's like these like unique patches of like... That looks like someone stepped like left like a footprint there. So that's worked in the past. But even still, it's a lot of digging.
Yeah. But the flowers made me some bank digging up the flowers. I don't know if that was intentional or just like pure luck that every fucking flower I dug up had money under it. But I don't know. $7. This is a fun one. What do you think?
Honestly, I think it's a buy. I enjoyed the game. I'm still enjoying the game. It's a fun time. Comes recommended.
Cool. All right, one final game to talk about tonight, and I think we are going to SML After Dark territory. George,
no,
play us the intro.
The intro.
Just love to play it. I love it. It is so good. Yeah, final game to talk about tonight is called Marble Maid, developed by Shady Corner in East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft, released April 28th on Switch for $9.99. A cutie in a maid uniform prepares to tackle her dirtiest job yet. In this puzzle ball adventure, you'll control the adorable maid as she rolls around a larger-than-life estate and clears away the dust bunnies plaguing each room. Chase down and eliminate at least three dust bunnies and roll to the goal before time is up, and you'll clear the stage. Chris, why is this one After Dark?
Because there's darkness in it.
Ooh, like what?
No, there are dark stages in it, and they suck. I hate those stages. Okay, so this game, if you look at it, it's definitely going to remind you of Super Monkey Ball, but it's which is a great, great, fantastic game that I love. And but once you actually play it, it's actually not quite like that. But we'll talk about it anyway. So yeah, you play as the maid. She is a little chibi maid, and like the game basically opens on a panty shot, which will kind of give you a clue as to like what's in store. However,
yeah, we should point out this is M-rated. So.
This is M-rated. This does feature nudity. So, and we'll get to that. I got to save that for later so that you're interested right now while I talk about the boring stuff. Because the gameplay itself has any kind of risque content. It is just a girl in a hamster ball, and you jump around some stages and look for dust bunnies. So that is basically what happens. It drops you, you go to one of the stage kind of hubs, and there's various, basically like a world hub. And then each one is divided up into stages, and you play each stage one at a time. They kind of have different themes based on household stuff. It's all very abstract because your character ends up being like 1 inch tall while, running around like giant dishes and things like that. So it drops you into the stage, and you roll around in this hamster ball. You can also jump. You can also dash. Your job is to get around the stage and look for at least three dust bunnies that that will basically run away from you, and it's very hard to catch them. However, if they fall off the side of the stage, then they will reappear exactly where they were. And then you can like spawn camp them essentially, which is basically how it goes. Like that's not a that's not a cheat or a cheese. That's how you play this game. And yeah, it's like I said, it's a very abstract house. You're like jumping around like weird blocks and shelves and like dishes that are just floating in midair and whatnot. And basically the goal is to get three of the five and then get to the end of the stage before the time runs out. If you get all five, then that's bonus points for you. And, the more dust bunnies that you collect, regardless of how much progress you've made, the more items in the gallery that you unlock, which you actually have to physically go to the gallery and do some platforming even to just look at the naughty pictures. But that is what the gallery is. It's all naughty pictures.
Yay.
It's everything from playful like underwear shots to like actual like naked boobs to like a little bit of girl on girl, but not like extreme or anything. It's all done in the same. Yeah, it's all done in the same cheap.
You've
style.
Sold me. You've sold me, girl on girl.
She's buying a bodies. Switch I'm just good. For this.
Yeah,
game.
this is your game. You should just go ahead and buy it. I don't need to sell you this game. So now here's the thing. No, actually, I'm going to get to that in a little bit. Let's go back to the gameplay. The stages are actually, they do get difficult. Eventually, they introduce things like darkness, where you have to like roll across like a candle to get like any kind of light in the stage. Otherwise, you're just blindly fumbling through it, and then you'll end up falling off. There are also boss fights. You're introduced to rival characters who, by the way, also appear in the gallery. and, then you have to play like basically I can't remember what game also does this, but basically you have to bump them. Oh, it's like the Super Mario 64 bullies. So you have to bump them before they bump you, but not while they're like not while they've got invincibility frames, which is basically while they're like charging up a charge shot. And if you bump them off the side enough times, then they die, and then you get to move on and, you know, go unlock a new area where you can play some more stages. Tons of stages there are, and tons of stuff to unlock, like I said. But if you want to get to the good stuff, like the real good stuff anyway, I guess, then you got to work hard. This game will put you to work to see naughty bits that you can just look up on Google. and the other thing is that although I haven't run across the straight up hentai shots, I strongly suspect that they are censored in the Switch version. The Steam version has some really, like, you know, adults-only type material. Whereas my clue for the Switch version, besides the fact that they just straight up don't allow that stuff, is, you know, anything stronger than, like, you know, boobs and a little bit of, you know, ooh, whatnot. Ooh. Yeah. whatever juvenile thing you want to say. Besides that, they do have a fully unlocked fan art gallery, which the fan art is not locked away at all. So you can just go to that gallery and have fun. And that one is censored. Like, they do put, like, bits in front of, like, the actual penetration that they're displaying. That,
well, that's a failure of a fan area.
It's on the Switch, Aki. Buy the fucking Steam version if you want the hardcore shit.
Yeah, yeah. So that's ultimately what I'm getting at. Yeah, it's on Steam. Yeah, go get it on Steam.
Of course it's on Steam.
But yeah, so like that's the thing to know about this game. It is fun. It's not Monkey Ball because you're not tilting the whole level, which is the idea of Monkey Ball. It's you are just moving a girl around in a hamster ball and trying to navigate these stages with super, you know, everything from like fun to like super frustrating physics. It just depends.
But balls still touch, so.
Yeah, yeah. So basically it's a fun game. I think it's worth playing. I think that if you want the real naughty stuff, go to Steam. Otherwise, yeah, pretty nice on Switch.
Well, it's $10. What do you say?
Oh wow. These are really filthy.
Yeah, see, told you.
Hockey says. Yeah, $10. I think it's worth it for the gameplay alone. I also think, you know, it's got a little bit of naughty content for fans of that to add to the collection, along with, you know, your block knockers and your waifu uncovered, whatever.
Well, I've seen this game. Block knockers ain't got nothing on this.
No. Yeah, like I said, the Steam version is if you want to, like, delve into that. And at which point, I don't know, maybe your $10 could be spent on filthier stuff. There's plenty of it out there. In order to look up some of these games, I had to turn that filter off. And I'm like, dang, there's so much of this.
Steam is like, are you sure you want to look at this?
The filter was on by default. I didn't even know there was a filter. I was blissfully unaware of it until I started like looking.
See, it's
for,
on
like,
for me because it keeps signing me out on my browser like all the time, so I'm constantly having to relog
isn't that
in.
A pain in the ass.
Let me get my Steam guard. Boop boop boom.
It even has a button that says to keep you logged in, and it don't fucking do it.
No, it doesn't.
Huh. I never had that problem. I don't know.
It drives me nuts.
Oh well. Well, that is it for this episode. We made it through another one.
Oh my god, is it?
Yeah, thank God we fucking made it. Holy shit. Does anyone have any suggestion of music we could play to end the show, or am I just going to pick something?
Skater Girl. I don't know why, but I really want to listen to Skater Girl. Or Skater Boy, whatever.
No, the show, not the after show music, the actual show. I'm not playing Avril Lavigne on my show.
I mean, I guess you could always...
And I haven't a clue.
From Marvel made it, the OST's out there, so I don't know.
I don't know. Is the OST out there?
I don't know.
Purnell, maybe do you have the soundtrack for Persona Q?
No, I do not, unfortunately.
I thought it came with one.
I'm not sure if it did.
Chris?
Well, I mean,
unless it came with it.
Oh, I don't know.
Use it anyway. I mean, freaking YouTube it.
I don't know. I'll look for something. We'll play something. Music here, blah, blah, blah. End of the show. Does anyone have any final words?
I think music here, blah, 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 is pretty much perfect.
Yeah, I got stories. Do you got the skill? Do the battle? You must be crazy.
First off, I want to thank you all for coming. I know you came to see some B-boys and B-girls get down. But before we get to that, we have a special guest here today. And
My flow drop, show shot, we're about to pop like we walk the low tops. Cruise drop the boombox, we don't lose knots. While the crowd shoot jocks, who has the most style? Smoke is the cleanest. Who's smoking the floor and burning holes in his Adidas? You bust and I bust and I bust and you bust. Who was the motherfucker in the red Pumas? It's a tree grabbing the nuts at. Standing on one hand and making all the buzz back. Trust that we rush attack with some fat. Whether on concrete or on the mats. Doing dynamics to do so damn ass. Spinning circles like ceramics, infinite air tracks. And rhyme while you flip flop the towel.
Rock the floor with your hip hop style.
Alright. It's about that time right now. We're gonna do it like this. You're gonna go out, you're gonna exhibit your best stuff. You get one chance. Ready?
To bring you a special bulletin.
This is called breakdancing, or break. Like rapping, it's a competitive display of style. Dance as a form of ritual warfare.
Break the different elements.
Hip hop is a culture.
MCs. Sometimes when it comes time to bust rhymes, I unwind on MCs with punchlines.
Ridiculous and ravenous, battling advocate, immaculate, indigenous rapping is totally fabulous. DJ.
B-boys. What you call great boys. Great boys.
Hip-hop style.